What are we going to do? Old horse face is leaving.
Florida with an HD radio digital signal. We are Sports Radio 560 WQAM, Miami, Fort Lauderdale.
I'd say she's a dog, but that'd be an insult. You know how much of a dog lover I am?
But we got a call here. The number one rated Mohammed David in his home, at least according to my aspirations. Stay away from me. I don't even know how you have children. Miramar, hello.
Yes, I want your take on Jay Fiedler.
Oh, well, Jay Fiedler is a great quarterback and a good Jew.
I like Jay Fiedler.
Well, not to mention he's got extraordinarily smooth buttocks.
Oh, yeah!
But you got to be careful what you say here.
Oh. Thank you, Mom.
No, wait a minute. Don't go.
But I have nothing else to say.
Well, how about this? How's the weather down there in the Miramar?
I'm right down the street from you.
Oh, yeah.
I have to go.
Oh, wait. By the way, something.
No, I have to go.
Look, I tell you what. I'll hold you over the break. How's that, huh? I'll give you one of my old tank t-shirts. How's that? No, wait! That was the only caller we had.
The veins on your nose is glowing again.
And around those oozing pimples, you call my la-la-la. If you go look in the mirror, you'll see a roadmap of Ypsilanti. You got your hippie son way too tight.
My nose glows when something stings. Almost every day I think. And my veins, they start to tickle. My adenoid, door. Yeah, I look like a ball in a bag. That's because I'm a pretty old bride. When I know things feel the purple veins.
That's, of course, all the crying for Jackie Johnson, Leo. Boy, you talk about overrated. Although I'd rather hear about Jackie Johnson than Ronald Reagan, I'll tell you
that. Sure.
Anything would be a breath of fresh air at this point. Here's a fax that says Paul and old Ron are now doing web polls. Can you believe the nerve of these copycats?
Yeah, sure.
Why not?
Easily.
They copy everything else we do and everybody else does. Why the hell wouldn't they copy that? In fact, remember Omelet? They used to work on that show?
Mm-hmm.
He told me that every time Paul farts, it's an egg fart. That's how unoriginal he is. That's what he told me. Yeah, I'll think about it. At any rate, so I voted on their poll. They want to know who's going to replace, who should replace Jackie Johnson on Channel 7. Not that I care, because first of all, I'm almost never there to see it anyway. And number two, I would never watch Channel 7. Number three, Jackie Johnson's a horse face with big breasts. See, the size crowd, you know, the size queens and the size whatever you call them, who are just into big breasts and big penises and don't care what it's attached to. I have nothing but contempt and dismay for those people. They're entitled, but I find that rather, I don't know.
She has a pretty face.
Who?
Jackie Johnson.
No, she does not.
Okay.
We've already been through this a million times. She's got a donkey face.
Okay.
But anyway, Jackie Garrido from Univision 23 is way ahead. I voted for Bob Weaver, who's doing very well on there. He needs to do something. He's tied for second place with 18%. So nice Paul, however that goes.
Paul Pot.
Yeah, nice Paul Pot. Idiot. At any rate, we'll give you some more good ideas as time goes on, because obviously you guys are sure going to need to make no mistake about that. Let's see. What retail place in South Florida do you hate the most? That was our poll yesterday. Very popular poll. A lot more popular than the weather. I didn't see actually how many votes were on there. Now, that would have been interesting. They only show you percentages.
Right, like the QAM website, because the numbers would be very embarrassing. If they
right. In other words, the total number of votes might be... Yeah, which is a little embarrassing. We have no problem showing it. We had 1,768 votes on our poll yesterday, and if most people didn't have AOL, we'd have probably had about 5,000, but they can't do it. What retail place in South Florida do you hate the most? Walmart wins fairly handily with 452. Well, I will give credit to Winn-Dixie. for being a strong second with 331. Now, let me just say this, because I did read that Winn-Dixie is doing some refurbishing and some, you know, fixing this. They need to do a lot more than just refurbishing. You people at Winn-Dixie, if you were smart, not like Fredo, but if you're really smart, you would, like, revolutionize your stores and put invest the money to, like, make them a spanking brand. You know what I'm talking about.
Or just spanking.
Or just spank them. Anyway, they had 331 Winn-Dixie. A lot of people are not too into their schmutz. BrandSmart 184, and you were nervous about putting them on there. I don't understand, quite frankly. What do we have to do without Goldstein? I don't know anybody by that name. BrandSmart 184. As a matter of fact, the people that work at BrandSmart, there are a lot of them who like me. It's just that the ownership or management, whatever they are, those born-again fanatics, they hate me like poison, and so I would never shop there again. I wouldn't care if they gave me the merchandise for free, although Eckerd's 157, Kmart 119, and then it's way down, Radio Shack 92, and they want your name, address, shoe size, they want to know how big it is, Rooms to Go 72, Home Depot 57, Best Buy 49, CompUSA 45, Pep Boys 43. I hate that name. That name just bothers me. I've always I've never bought anything there, but I just don't like that name, Pep Boys. What does that mean?
What would you call it? Yay, boys.
No, seriously, Pep Boys sounds like Pepto-Bismol, like you got a sour stomach or something.
Like Pepsi.
Circuit City, 40. Albertsons, 38, which there are, quite frankly, there aren't that many of them anymore. There's that store, there's one over there by Peters Road and University. You know where that one is?
No.
You don't?
I mean, I'm sure.
And I don't think I ever shopped in there. And then there's one on Oakland Park Boulevard that's just a fine store. But anyway, they didn't do all that great anyway. 38. Burdine's, which is now Burdine's Macy's 34, is also the one at is that all of their stores or just the one in the Macy's Mall?
You know, I don't know. That was a shop.
Because the Burdine's, I would be appalled if the Burdine's in the Broad Mall was Burdine's Macy's. Not that I would ever shop there because I like, what's the place I like that nobody.
Dillard's.
Yeah, Dillard's
nice
for Dullards.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a beautiful store. Sure. It's overpriced, but. Look, there's a lot of people standing around in there waiting to wait on you. You know, they're just.
Right.
I feel so bad every time I go in there. They got great merchandise, overpriced, but I don't care about that.
It's clean.
I'm not looking for bar. It's a beautiful store. Mm-hmm. Please go to Dillard's and keep them in business. Mattress Giant 25, Sam's Club 17, which Josh told that story.
I told him the story this morning, Josh.
Wow, about how they wanted to buy two big bottles of soda, and they stuck them under the counter and said, well, you have to buy four.
But who says that to somebody who spends like $300 in your store?
They're spending $300 in the store because they're setting up their apartment and going in and buying a whole bunch of crap, and they wanted to buy just two big boxes of cereal and two big 2-liter bottles of soda. Oh, no, we got to put those under the counter because you can only buy four. However, can you imagine going to the Publix and you put your merchandise down in the counter and you have two big sirloin steaks? Oh, sorry, we're putting those under. You have to buy four.
What? I'm like, can you look me in the face and tell me that that's right? And he's just like, yeah, you know, that's our policy.
Really? I would have spit in his face just like the beast in Noah had been doing the last couple of days. I would have, you know, I'm going to tell you, this radio station, I've been telling the audience for a long time that it's not a real radio station, it's a circus, you know? But the story that the Beast related to me about an hour ago is just, even I am still having trouble digesting that. After all the crap I've seen, I've been in this business a million years.
About 30, man.
A lot longer than that. 44 years I've toiled in this godforsaken crap business, and I'm going to tell you, I have never heard of anything like, have you?
No.
I mean, it's one thing, prank, something like that. People put, you know, it'd be cute, funny, whatever. Oh, Lowe's had 13. That was the end of the pool.
Okay. Now, we should say that we've had some stories. We've seen some things, and, you know.
Oh, I've seen some things.
Yeah, I know. We don't want to hear about those.
Yeah. You would.
No, back at IOD and here and all this, it's crazy. Radio's crazy.
But not like this.
No, never like
so
this.
So, evidently, what happened yesterday, and of course, Mo is. It sounds like that scene from The Hitcher where C. Thomas Howell looks at Rutger Hauer in the jail and he goes and spits all over his chin, you know, and then Rutger Hauer kind of wipes it off with that very bizarre look on his face. And there's something going on between those two, you know.
Also,
drag,
remember Clockwork Orange, same kind of a thing there, Mr. Deltoids.
Oh, yeah, right.
Alex there because he has a hot spot.
Yeah, I certainly do. Mr. Deltoid.
Hi, 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 Mr. Deltoid.
But at any rate, so Mo Howard David takes a gulp of water out of a bottle of water, and spits right in the Beast's face.
That's correct.
Right. So then this morning, just to show that he had the cojones to get even with him, and I guess this is the spitting challenge. Rumor has it that Josh Beckett is going to be throwing a spitter, and that's going to be in his repertoire, but it's not going to be spit. But at any rate, So now the beast takes a gulp of water and spits all over Mo's puss.
Absolutely better than sex.
Wow. And then Mo goes running in on the Joe Rowe show to announce breathlessly that I tipped my hat to the beast. I didn't think he had the cojones to do it, but I tipped my hat. See, he's trying desperately to suck around with him again. I mean, he's made the rounds with everybody else, and everybody else in the building don't want anything to do with him, so now he's going back to the beast. He's going back to square one, because I think other than getting Carolyn shoved off of that show, the beast was the first one he tried to get fired at it, even before you.
No, I was the first.
Were you the first? George was the first. Well, that didn't work. Although it came pretty close. You'd be amazed at how close.
Oh, I know.
Within a hair's breadth. At any rate, so they're like spitting up a storm there on a morning show as Mo tries once again to find somebody to latch onto, to cling onto. Estella Warren ain't no Jackie Johnson, I'll tell you that. She's got Jackie Johnson to beat hands down your pants. She's behind our beaded curtain today. You wouldn't agree that Estella Warren looks better than Jackie Johnson even on a bad day?
Oh, yeah, no, Estella Warren looks better than Jackie Johnson.
See, Estella Warren is somebody that if you got excited about her, I'd say, now I can understand that. I can definitely feel your joy. But this Jackie Johnson business...
Don't catch me.
This Jackie Johnson business is just... overdone. In fact, that would be a good poll. What's been overdone more, Jackie Johnson and how hot she is, or Ronald Reagan's death?
Oh, God.
There's nobody in the box, by the way. I don't care what anybody says. There's no, in fact, it wouldn't surprise me if at one of these minutes it pops open and Gordon Liddy jumps out. He's in there with a rat. Estella Warren is a strawberry blonde vixen who's well on her way to fame and fortune, has tons of fans wanting to catch a glimpse of her. She's a former professional swimmer whose model for Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition can be seen on ad billboards everywhere. That's quite a change from the young model who only a few years ago was closer to going to the Olympic Games as a national champion swimmer than doing the runways of the Paris catwalk. Estella Warren was born December 23, 1978, to an elementary school principal mother and automobile salesman father. The body of a swimmer with the face of a wayward girl that could be more, what could be more alluring? By Estella's own admission, she likes to prance around nude and considers clothing irrelevant. Estella declares, coming from a barely clothed childhood as a swimmer makes one really comfortable with my body.
I'm comfortable with her body.
Well, you'd like to be. As a professional swimmer, Estella moved to Toronto at the age of 12 to train with the national synchronized swim team. Estella had already been living on her own in Toronto for 4 years, so the move to New York City to pursue a modeling career was not a difficult one. Her father became her manager and modeling agent when Estella decided to exchange the pool goggles for high heels and a very smart career move. Next thing Estella knew, she was doing photo shoots with professional fashion photographer Ellen von Unworth and posing for Italian Vogue. As word spread of her beauty, so did her exposure. Now Estella's beautiful face was on the covers of the French and Spanish Marie Claire, French, German, Spanish, Italian Elle, German GQ, as well as Yahoo Internet Life. And she's appeared for ads in 80 billion different things, Chanel. Estelle hasn't changed much from her days growing up in the Ontario suburbs where she had the reputation of someone who likes to party, eh? When she's not posing for photographers, Estelle enjoys horseback riding. She likes to ride, playing the piano, singing, and, of course, swimming. She's no stranger to wearing a swimsuit. Been featured in Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, frolic on the beaches with fellow models Letitia Casta and Heidi Klum. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
Estelle is presently signed with modeling agencies in New York, Paris, London, Milano, and the sexy champion supermodel is looking to take her talents to the silver screen. Let's see, she was born December 23rd, 1978, which makes her about 25, give or take. So she's behind the beaded curtain today. Now, are we leaving up that other stuff there, that Ashcroft montage?
You know it.
Oh, if you failed to see that yesterday, trust me when I tell you.
We're Sports Radio 560, QAM.
At my junior, honey.
They're sitting around with anticipation. Watching the clock up there on the wall. Then the bell goes off, the show gets insane now. And the big stuff people break down the door. And all hell breaks loose when
schools let the kids out.
School, 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 school.
Schools let the kids out.
School, 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 school.
Schools let the kids out.
School.
Summertime and the kids, they're going wild. Most be playing with horses spraying, but most kids, they head straight down to the moors. Yeah, riots breaking and things are insane now. No more English history, you're the mob. Don't panic yet, move out of the way now. Trample everything down that's left in their path. Yeah, the frenzy's on when
schools let the kids out.
School, 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 school.
Schools let the kids out.
School, 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 school.
Schools let the kids out.
School, 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 school.
Schools let the
idea how they can save a ton of money in the American school system. Just teach fractured history, and all I have to do is eliminate the teachers and just have three TV monitors up on there. One with CNN, one with Fox Nazi News, and one with MSNBC.
Oh,
all
they got to
do is just watch all day and learn the fractured history of the world in America. Like we're doing all this week with this Reagan crap. I mean, it just, will it ever end?
No.
Man. Here's a fax that says, you know you're in Winn-Dixie when you hear the voice on the PA system announce, now on sale, oxtail, 49 cents a pound in the butcher department.
Wow.
It says, just the prevalent odor of Winn-Dixie is enough to keep me out. Well, I don't want to say it's only Winn-Dixie, but I've been in many supermarkets in my life. When you walk in, and it just happens to be the right day, and you're downwind from the seafood department. Oh, my God.
On the ripe day?
Wow. On any day when it got the, and now even people that like fish.
Right, like that.
Please don't tell me that they enjoy that aroma.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, God.
That's not fish, that's rot.
The smell of rotting fish and seafood. Ah!
Like, you like
beef,
right?
You'll have to grab me to the dough, I'll tell you that on the other side.
You like hamburger, you like beef?
Yeah.
When it's gone bad, when you take it out of the fridge and it's gone bad, that's not a good smell.
You mean when you open up that package when you couldn't see what was inside of it and it turns out to be green and purple?
Right, the mysterious meat.
Britney Spears injures knee and has surgery. There's the bad news. And, of course, a lot of guys want to kiss it and make it better.
I will.
And her knee, too. Pop princess Britney Spears injured her knee during a video shoot, was hospitalized for arthroscopic surgery, her record label said yesterday. Spears, 22. She's only 22 still. When I introduced you to her, she was only 17 5 years ago. You didn't know who the hell she was.
Nope.
And you tell me Jackie Johnson is beautiful. Oh, God.
I said she has a pretty face.
Oh, man, pretty ugly face, if you ask me. I don't care what you say. We've been through it a million times. And she's leaving, and we wish her best of luck, and just, you know, get lost. Much ado about nothing. But she's on television, see, therefore she must be just fabulous. She must be hot as a pistola. Spears, 22, was taken to a hospital after hurting herself late Tuesday. Jive Records said in a statement, an MRI showed floating cartilage in her knee. The injury occurred after Spears completed outdoor scenes for the video on her new single, Outrageous, with rapper Snoop Dogg in New York City Borough of Queens. Spears was doing choreography when her knee gave out, Jive said. Aw, poor baby. Outrageous will be featured in the movie Catwoman, due out next month. Spears is scheduled to begin a North American tour June 22nd in Hartford, Connecticut, according to her. Why would she be playing a place like Hartford, Connecticut? What a lame-ass town that is. Her latest album, In the Zone, was released in November. Spears was forced to cancel two shows in March because of a knee injury. So it seems like her knees are just giving out. Kind of like Monica Lewinsky. Too much time on those knees, baby. And they start, when in doubt, giving out. Here's our poll question today. I like this poll. We do this about once a year. And that's because none of us really know the names of any of these people anymore. But certainly our astute audience, they'll have some names for the poll.
Sure.
Although, even back in the day, we did know the names. Who is your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? I guess we also got to put on there, I don't watch porno. How's that?
Okay.
Huh? Let's see. I've got Peter North, which would be mine. Bandy Woods, which I think ought to be a lot of people's. I don't watch porno. And how about,
I don't know
any of the names.
Or I don't have one.
I don't have what? I don't have
favorite.
One?
I don't have a favorite. Either because you like them all or...
That's ridiculous. What kind of a choice is that? You better bone up on your polls, mister.
What
I would be doing these polls all summer. You better start borrowing some of Paul and old Ron's polls.
No, thanks.
Let's see. I don't know any of their names. Is that okay? Can we handle that? So we got Peter North, Bandy Woods. I don't watch porno, which we don't believe you. And I don't know any of their names. And then we can add a whole bunch of monitors. We go now in the National Post, a very, very, very right-wing publication here in Toronto. This morning on the editorial page, I'm sitting on the throne reading the editorials. Usually it helps me along. This one just shocked the living crap out of me. Now, it seems about a year ago I read you one of the articles in there from the op-ed page about legalizing or decriminalizing pot. Remember that?
Right.
This one, this is not an op-ed piece. This is an editorial from the National Post, Tax the Stoners. It says, if you had any lingering doubt that the push to legalize marijuana is no longer limited to left-wing activists and aging hippies, a report this week from the Fraser Institute should erase it. Prepared by Stephen Easton, an economics professor at Simon Fraser University, the report suggests that legalizing pot would bring economic benefits without inflicting any social harm. The Institute insists it doesn't take formal positions on these sorts of issues, but the fact that a conservative economist writing for a conservative think tank would make it an unequivocal case for liberalizing our drug laws just shows how far our debate has come. As interesting as the source of the report is what it says, most legalization advocates focus on the pointlessness of saddling otherwise law-abiding Canadians with criminal records or fines for indulging in a substance less dangerous or addictive than alcohol or tobacco, an argument we agree with wholeheartedly. But Mr. Easton makes a different and no less compelling case that legalization would allow government rather than the black market to enjoy the spoils. As he put it, if we treat marijuana like any other commodity, we can tax it, regulate it, and use the resources the industry generates rather than continue a war against consumption and production that's long since been lost. By his estimates, the marijuana industry in British Columbia alone, worth more than $7 billion a year, would inject at least $2 billion into government coffers. That's just in B.C. alone. Of course, Canada's a long way from legalization, and even decriminalization has proven a political hot potato, with Paul Martin's Liberals having stalled on reforms first initiated in 2003, and Stephen Harper's Conservatives pledging to abandon them entirely. We hope this report will help convince both men that our marijuana laws are in desperate need of overhaul. How do you like that, eh?
A lot.
Pretty amazing. Would you read that in the Herald?
No.
Sun Sentinel?
No.
No, no chance. What does this fact say from Lynn? The operation in your article yesterday, genital cutting, is widely done in the equine racing slash breeding world. The purpose is to limit bacterial intrusion. It's called a castlet, the surgical technique in which the vulvar lips of the mare are cut and sutured so that they grow together, making the vulvar opening smaller. Well, thanks a lot, Lynn, for that technical for that technical information. Did you know that?
No, that was news to me.
Not even 10:30 already, we learned something. Here's something else. Author T. Allman, whose latest book, Rogue State, America at War with the World, will be in Coral Gables tonight, 6 o'clock at Books and Books, 265 Aragon Avenue. He'll be discussing his work and hold a question and answer session as well as signed copies of his book. It's a paperback, and you ought to be reading it. Alman is also author of Miami City of the Future, the highly respected book, which is a bestseller in Florida for more than 3 years. Got it? 6 o'clock tonight at the Books and Books in the Gables, 265 Aragon Avenue. WQAM, hello.
How you doing, Uncle Neil?
Sensational.
As much as you don't love the Sun Sentinel and Michael Mayo, his article today is tremendous. Did you see it?
I read it. It's not tremendous. It's okay, but the ones that I got are a lot better than that. I read it.
I'm just saying, it's just, you know, all you keep on seeing is Reagan. And let me ask you this, because you've been around the block a little bit more.
Yes.
Has there ever been this much venom and rancor and anger towards one side of the country as it is from the right side these days?
No, there's never been, the country's never been this polarized, and also there's never been this much of a fuss over any president who ever died, other than Kennedy, who was assassinated, and was a young man at the time. Here's a guy that was 93 years old, that was dying for at least 10 years, and a lot of us believe that he already was going into senility during his second term in office, and there's plenty of evidence to substantiate that. But this is like madness. It's like media madness. But a lot of people will be happy to have a day off tomorrow if they get it. Right?
Yeah.
I'm getting it.
I'll bet.
Nice big day off tomorrow. It's a national holiday. The markets are going to be closed. Banks are going to be closed. All of these things. It's just...
all of these things.
Amazing. Just shocking. The state of... And talk about wagging the dog, man. Talk about diverting everybody's attention from all the other crap that's going on in the world. But you know something? After this weekend, once they open a box up and realize it's empty, after this weekend, that'll be the end of this. All the eulogizing and all the rewriting of history and all this bullcrap, all the lying, that's going to come to an end, and we'll be right back to cold, harsh reality of all the crap like
Abu Ghraib
that's going on in the world, and that memo and all this other stuff that's slowly but surely leaking out. When in doubt, like Josh Becker would say, it's leaking out.
This is Sports Radio 560 QAM.
I urge everyone to complain to this station.
$1.95 at the local pet store. Fuzzy and cute, who could ask for more? Do the dribble. Yeah, do the dribble.
Wreck them.
The best damn pet you're ever gonna own.
Absolutely.
Who we got here? It's Richard Gere with the gerbil and the tube and the matches here. Do the gerbil. Do the gerbil.
Wreck them.
The best damn pet you'll ever want to own. You could have a puppy. You could have a pussy cat. But when you've got a gerbil, you'll know where it's at. Pick one out. Look for flaws. Choose the one with the 9-inch claws. Do the gerbil.
All right.
Do the gerbil. The best damn pet you'll ever want to own.
Oh! 10:31 at 560. You know why I played that?
Why did you play that?
Because we still can.
Oh.
Well, I'm scouring through our 85 million bits here to try to find ones that we can still play during these days of, well, you know the days.
Wine
Hector says, far be, and Hector's got a good point. I just looked at that picture again. That's not probably the best facial picture of Estella Warren you'll ever see.
But it's the most naked picture that you'll see.
It says, far be it for me to criticize a naked young girl's body. However, when I look at Estella Warren, I get the feeling I'm staring at Macaulay Culkin with long, wet hair and boobs. And you're not really criticizing her body. It's the face. And he does have a good point there. But just keep in mind, she's got wet hair, and it's still all there, says Hector. He also says something else, but I'm not going to go into that. Nikki Dial for the poll, and then says, yum, as in yam yum. Got it? Now, we're not going to even know a lot of these people, right?
Right.
Which is fine. So maybe they can even make some names up. What do we care? And we can put that poll on there now, Eric, anytime you're ready, because we don't want to, like, overburden you. Anytime you're ready.
It's on there.
It is?
Sure.
Well, mine says the poll is down, so it just must have momentarily. I'm refreshing it right now. It's refreshing. It still says the poll is down. Are you sure? Positive?
Are you sure?
One vote for Peter North, one vote for Nikita Denise, who I never heard of.
Yeah, but it says the poll is down. Doesn't yours say the poll is down with a big green banner on it like it always has before he puts it, huh?
Look at that.
Look at what?
The poll is down.
Oh, it's down. At any rate, whenever Eric gets around to deciding to let you people vote, that's when you'll be able to vote. Jenna Jameson, somebody says, and what's not to like there? Even I know who that is. Oh, P.S. Paris Hilton. Oh, Paris Hilton is not a porno star, okay? Just
right.
Because she made that one video that everybody's buying up. There's another classic example of what I'm talking about. Now, even you would agree. In fact,
yeah.
You'd probably be one of the first to say,
sure,
Paris Hilton, I would say she's a dog, but again, I'm a dog lover, and that would be an insult to every canine in the world.
How about a coyote?
She is gruesome.
Yeah.
She reminds me of Paula Jones.
I'd like her better if she gruesome.
Remember Paula Jones with that schnoz?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, see, one thing about Kennedy, man, he had great taste. Bubba, as much as we love him, he must have bad eyesight. Or maybe it's because he's got that little crooked problem or whatever it is. But he had the worst damn taste of Monica, what a pork she was, you know.
I think with Bubba, that's because
although what's
her
name was not too bad. Jennifer Flowers. She
right.
was okay.
And Elizabeth Graykin or whatever her name is.
Grayson,
I don't know how to say her name.
Dick Grayson? He was Robin in Batman. At any rate, Jenna Jameson, flawless, but Paris Hilton, I mean, John in Columbia, South Carolina, shame on you. He put that in very small print at the bottom. P.S. Don't put her on there. She's not a porno star, porno actress. She's just a nasty, skanky-looking bitch. Looks like Karen Carpenter on a bad day.
Okay, the poll's back.
It's back? Yeah, mine ain't back. Let me refresh it again. This is a really... Oh, look at this. Louisiana voters to decide on gay marriage ban. I wonder how that's going to go. There we go. I don't know any of their names for. See, that's a good choice because, quite frankly, does it really matter what the names are?
No.
Nikita Denise 2, Peter North 1, I Don't Watch Porno 1, sure. Nikki Dial 1, and then we got Bambi Woods, don't have any yet, and Jenna Jameson. We'll have a list of dozens on here before we're done, I'm sure, because we got plenty of perverts out there, and that's the way we like it. Join QAM and the Real Yellow Pages from Bell South this afternoon, noon to 1, at Action Carpet at 10791 Southwest 184th Street in Miami. Stop by to pick up tickets to an upcoming Marlins home game. That's noon to 1 today at Action Carpet. And join QAM and the Marlins tonight starting at 7 o'clock for a Marlins watch party at the Hollywood Ale House, located in the Oakwood Plaza. Stop by to win prizes from Billy the Marlin and the Mermaids. That's tonight at 7 at the Hollywood Ale House. WQAM, hello. Not there. WQAM, hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, please.
Speaking.
He heard you.
Yeah, okay. And we heard him. WQAM, hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hey, you were talking about Latin America yesterday, Ronald Reagan, our good friend. And
yeah.
I just wonder, my favorite memory was when he went to Brazil and he raised the glass to toast the people of Bolivia.
Uh-huh.
And the next day they asked, sir, do you realize you're not in Bolivia, you're in Brazil? And he said, no, it's because I'm getting confused, I'm going to Bolivia. And he wasn't going to Bolivia today, he was going to Colombia.
Well, Tim, it's all the same, you know.
Yeah, that was the same, right? I mean, the only thing he knew was Cuba and Nicaragua and Grenada, and that was it, which is like, you know, nothing in Latin America.
Exactly. Well, don't be saying that too loud. There'll be a knock on your door pretty soon. Good luck, you pal. Don't be saying that.
What do you do for Cuba?
Not much. He killed a few Cubans in Grenada.
Yeah.
5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon Wireless. I got a great story. I got a whole bunch of good stuff again, but we want to get 80 million names on the poll first. UN envoys recalled over husband's strip club tab. Did you see this story?
No.
You know how much his tab was at Scores, a gentleman's club in Manhattan?
$10,000.
$129,626.
Wow.
I sure hope he had a good time.
That'll buy a lot of pie.
WQAM, hello.
My sister was Lou.
What did he say? Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I like her too. WQAM, hello.
Yeah, I'd like to put a name on the poll.
Yes, sir, speaking. Go ahead.
Chasey Lane.
Okay. See, Chasey Lane. And wait, there was that pause like there was going to be another one. No, there's not going to be another one. We're not asking who are your favorite 50 porno actors. Let me read the question again very, very succinctly, okay? Who is your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? Of all time. Not just like since last hookers, not just since last weekend, of all time. Covers a lot of territory. And back in the day, we actually even knew the names of the movies and the names of the people in them. But, I mean, now there's like 80 trillion. They're like a dime a dozen, you know? WQAM, hello.
Poor building sucks, please.
WQAM, hello.
Hello?
QAM.
Yeah, I want to hello.
Go ahead.
Christy Canyon.
Christy Canyon, okay. How deep is that canyon?
I'll get a dipstick.
Don't have one?
Not on me.
That's what I heard. WQAM, hello.
Hey, how you doing, yeah?
Pretty good.
I was just thinking about a poll for tomorrow. If we could do who's going to have less of a life after the election, Michael Moore or you?
Oh, sourpuss. By the way, thanks for reminding me. 2 weeks from tomorrow, the movie comes out.
Ow!
Fahrenheit 9/11.
Ooh, burn.
See, I hate to break the news to you, Pally, but my life continues. The paychecks continue coming in no matter who wins. Isn't that a shocker?
Yeah.
And Michael Moore, I don't think he's going to miss any meals. And if he does, he's stored up, okay, for those lean days. He's stored up for far ahead. WQAM, hello.
Neil.
Yes, sir.
Let's get Rocco Siffredi on, baby.
Rocco Siffredi, who also is called a Rocco, he's got a Ziffredi.
That's the one, baby.
Okay, you got it, baby. Okay. See you at the air in the closet. Rocco Siffredi, you know how to spell that? You can spell it with
Josh
an S or with
no.
A... Huh?
Josh says no.
I would put, I really don't know which one to say because he's got, like many of the porno actors, he's got many, many different names. I would put Rocco Ziffredi, Ziffredi, who seems to always be ready. Rocco Ziffredi.
Put it on Google, I got Siffredi.
Oh, that's okay. Like I said, it can be with a Z or an F. So if Google is saying with an S, then who's with an S? Okay? The S stands for, well, actually, he's a little long in, old and, long in the tooth at this point, Rocco Siffredi. But then again, aren't they all? Peter North just turned 86. Do you know that?
No.
And he's still
squirt.
Quite capable. UN envoy recalled over husband's strip club tab. A top Bangladeshi diplomat at the UN in New York has been ordered home after her husband ran up a huge bill at a Manhattan strip club. You're to return to Dhaka immediately. Leave your present responsibility, the Bangladesh foreign ministry told Saida Munatani, whatever her name is, at its New York mission. She's the number three person. Mrs. Tansneen was recalled after her spouse, Tahudil Chodhuri, shelled out $129,626 for a seven-hour session at Scores, a gentleman's club on Manhattan's Upper East Side. That's equivalent to 6,500 lap dances, lasting 23 days at 5 minutes a dance, or 39 bottles of Krug champagne at $3,316 a bottle. Or to put it in perspective, it's also the combined average of annual income of more than 430 of Mr. Chaudhuri's fellow countrymen just scraping by back home in Bangladesh, one of the world's poorest countries. But the man is refusing to pay the bill. He claims he was so drunk, he doesn't remember signing the authorization for four different credit cards. $129,626 for a seven-hour session at Scores. I had one hell of a time.
Live and local. We're Sports Radio 560 QAM.
If you blow too much, you're in trouble.
The following is an actual recording of a conversation between a porn star subscriber and a porn star advisor.
You've reached Porn Star Emergency Services. This is Kendra.
I need help. I've just been in an accident.
Oh, were you rear-ended?
Yes, yes I was, and it hurts.
Oh, it always hurts the first few times, but then you get used to it.
When you turn on Porn Star, an advisor is always there to turn you on.
My neck hurts. I think I have whiplash.
Oh, I love whips, but I just... charge more for bondage films.
Huh? Well, my car's totaled. I'll never get these pizzas delivered.
Hey, are you a pizza delivery guy?
Yeah.
I know you. Didn't we work together on Double Sausage at the Back Door by Tempter 27?
Ask your dealer about getting serviced by porn stars.
Oh, I think my head is starting to swell.
Oh, now I'm getting hot. I have your GPS coordinates. I'll be right over.
No, I need medical attention.
Oh, does that mean you want me to wear my nurse's uniform?
Sure, okay.
Porn star, always bare. Always ready.
10:45 at 560 WQM. Tracy Lord, somebody says, will stay at number one, even though they misspelled her first name. It's T-R-A-C-I. You do know that, of course. Okay, somebody says, Tom says, please put Nikki Charm on your poll. She's had some very hot sex in the mid to late 80s, although lately maybe not so hot. She was small and a very big nympho, is what Tom says.
All right.
So we'll build it. Now, line 9 is ringing. Could it possibly be? WQM, hello.
Neil.
Yes, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Neil?
All right.
Yo, I want to add a name to the poll.
Yeah.
Luis Miguel.
One of your people, man.
Luis?
One of your people.
No, he's Mexican.
No, he's one of your people. Not talking about Luis Miguel. I'm talking about the caller.
Oh, okay.
Luis Miguel is definitely not one of your people. 5670560, #560 on it. Whoever faxed us this stuff about the draft and all this other, just, I'm not putting that. First of all, it doesn't even say where that's from. You notice that? Does it say where it's from?
Nope.
Getting everybody into a panic and all worked up into a thing about having a draft. Although, certainly, that makes an excellent point. This is the most important thing of the whole day, which you notice how I put this off. TIA, Tampa International Airport, now verifies the flight of Saudis. The government has long denied that 2 days after 9/11 attacks, the three were allowed to fly. But now, this is on our website from the St. Pete Times, and there, as a matter of fact, is the picture. Tampa International Airport questions for the record, and it's a picture of the piece of the article. 2 days after the 9/11 attacks, with most of the nation's air traffic still grounded, a small jet landed at Tampa International Airport, picked up three young Saudi men, and left. The men, one of them thought to be a member of the Saudi royal family, were accompanied by a former FBI agent and a former Tampa police officer on the flight to Lexington, Kentucky. The Saudis then took another flight out of the country. The two ex-officers returned to Tampa International a few hours later on the same plane. For nearly 3 years, White House aviation and law enforcement officials have insisted that this flight never took place and have denied published reports and widespread Internet speculation about its purpose. But now, at the request of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks, TIA officials have confirmed that the flight did take place and have supplied details. The odyssey of the small Learjet 35 is part of a larger controversy over the hasty exodus from the U.S. in the days immediately after 9/11 of members of the Saudi royal family and relatives of Osama Yamami bin Laden. The terrorism panel, better known as the 9/11 Commission, said in April that it knew of 6 chartered flights with 142 people aboard, mostly Saudis, that left the U.S. between September 14th and 24th, but it said nothing about the Tampa flight. The Commission's General Counsel, Daniel Marcus, asked Tampa International in a letter dated May 25th for any information about a chartered flight with 6 people, including a Saudi prince, that flew from Tampa, Florida, on or about September 13th. He asked for the information no later than June 8th. TIA officials said they sent the reply on Monday, which would have been what? What today is the 10th?
Mm-hmm.
The 7th. The airport used aircraft tracking equipment normally assigned to a noise abatement program to determine the identity of all aircraft entering TIA airspace September 13 and found 4 records for the Learjet 35. The plane first entered the airspace from the south, possibly from the Fort Lauderdale area, sometime after 3 p.m. and landed for the first time at 3:34. It took off at 4:37 p.m. headed north. It returned to Tampa at 8:23, took off again at 8:48 headed south. Author Craig Unger, who first disclosed the possibility of a post-9/11 Saudi airlift in his book House of Bush, House of Saud, said in an interview that he believes the jet came to Tampa a second time to drop off 2 former law enforcement agents from Tampa who had accompanied 3 young Saudis to Lexington for security purposes. The Saudis asked the Tampa Police Department to escort the flight, but the department handed off the assignment to Dan Grossi, a former member of the force, Unger said. Grossi recruited Manuel Perez, a retired FBI agent, to accompany him. Both described the flight to Unger as somewhat surreal. They got the approval somewhere, Perez is quoted as telling Unger. It must have come from the highest levels of government. While there's no manifest for those aboard the Lear flight to Kentucky, Unger says the 4 nationals left Lexington for London aboard a Boeing 727. That manifest lists 8 Saudis, 2 Sudan nationals, 1 Tunisian, 1 Filipino, 1 Egyptian, and 2 British subjects. Of those, 3 listed residents in Normandy Trace Drive in Tampa, and all of them held Florida driver's licenses. They're Ahmad Al-Hazmi, then 19, Fahad Al-Zaid, then 20, and Talal M., whatever his name is, then 18, all male Saudis. It is not known which, if any, is a Saudi prince. Perez, the former FBI agent on the flight, could not be located this week, and Grossi declined to talk about the experience. I'm over it, he said in a telephone interview. The White House, the FAA, and the FBI said all said the flight didn't happen. Those are three agencies that are way over my head, and that's why I'm done talking about it. Grossi did say that Unger's account of his participation in the flight is accurate. The FAA is still not talking about the flights, referring all questions to the FBI, which also isn't answering any questions, nor is the 9/11 Commission. Unger's book criticizes the Bush administration for allowing so many Saudis, including the relatives of bin Laden, to leave the country without being questioned thoroughly about the terrorist attacks. 15 of the 19 men who did the hijacking, as we know, were Saudis. The 9/11 Commission, which has said the flights out of the U.S. were handled appropriately by the FBI, appears concerned with the handling of the Tampa flight. What information, if any, do you have about the screening by law enforcement personnel, including law enforcement personnel affiliated with the airport facility, of individuals on this flight? The commission asked TIA. The TIA Police Department said a check of its records indicated no member of its force screened the Lear's passengers, despite evidence that the flight occurred. Several new questions have arisen. Raytheon Aircraft is the only facility at TIA that serves general aviation, which includes charter flights. When appropriate, Raytheon collects landing fees from those aircraft for TIA and reports to TIA on the flights. According to airport records, Raytheon collected landing fees from only two aircraft September 13, one of them a Lear 35. But according to the record, the registration on the Lear is 505RP, a tail number which, according to the latest federal records, is assigned to a Cessna Citation based in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and Oscar Rene Potch, as in don't potchky around too much with this. Potts confirmed Tuesday that he owns a citation with that tail number and did before the terrorist attacks. Somebody must have gotten the registration number wrong in Tampa, he said. TIA spokeswoman Brenda Gagan said it's believed that a Lear September 13 journey began in Fort Lauderdale, possibly at a charter company called HapaJet Inc. The fact that the four trips in and out of Tampa all carried the flight base to the destination HPJ-32 lends support to that idea, but an official of HapaJet who wouldn't identify himself said the company does not own an aircraft with that registration number. Furthermore, he said that if the tail number is assigned to a Cessna citation, the company doesn't own any citations anyway. Most of the aircraft allowed to fly in U.S. airspace September 13 were empty airliners being ferried from the airports where they made quick landings on 9/11. The reopening of the airspace included paid charter flights, but not private non-revenue flights. So there you go, the government once again lying. And let me tell you this right now. I don't care whether it's the government or anybody else. When somebody lies to you once, they'll lie to you whenever they feel like it. Oh, the government wouldn't lie to us, would they? No, just like senators and presidents don't have men killed, Michael.
Right.
Just kind of like that.
Okay.
Anyway, here's our poll so far. Who is your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? I don't know any of their names, 25. Jenna Jameson, 19. I don't watch porno, 13. Christy Canyon, 5. Bandy Woods, 4. Nikita Denise, 4. Nikki Dial, 4. Tracy Lords, 3. Peter North's got a pair, and they're getting old. Chasey Lane's got 2. And Rocco Cifaretti, he ain't got any out of the first 81 votes. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T. And Verizon Wireless Line. WQAM, hello.
Hey.
Yes, sir.
Got a book for the poll.
Go ahead.
Ginger Lynn.
Ginger Lynn. Okay, you got it, man. Now, Ginger Lynn, Amber Lynn.
Right. Ginger Snaps.
Right. Ginger Rogers.
Snap. Ew, good.
Pop. Right. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon Wireless Line. I'll just intersperse all of my good stuff here today. In between, which we got several more of those Reagan stories.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah, see that guy that called that chronic, that called the star? He's a good guy, but he's very chronic, and he's what's wrong with talk radio. He's one of those people that, you know, he's the stereotype of what killed talk radio. But at any rate, I did read the Mike Mayo column, and it was pretty good for Mike, but the fact is that these other articles are so much better, and anybody can read the Sun Sentinel. Catch my drift? So why should I read that? Nice going, Mike Mayo. Very good, but try again harder next time. Two U.S. companies that supplied interpreters and interrogators to the Pentagon have been hit with a class action lawsuit in which they're accused of engaging in a conspiracy with unnamed government officials to torture and humiliate Iraqi prisoners in order to boost their profits.
Abu Ghraib.
The civil lawsuit filed in California court yesterday called for the companies, Titan Corp and CACI International, immediately to halt such activities and to pay millions of dollars in compensation to the victims. The complaint was filed on behalf of 9 Iraqis by the Center for Constitutional Rights, a Washington-based legal foundation, which estimated that hundreds of other Iraqis could also join the action. It also lists as defendants a former Titan employee, Adel Nakla, whatever his name is, Nakla, who was stationed at the Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, as well as two CACI employees, Stephen Stefanowitz and John Israel. John Israel.
Oi!
The suit alleges includes allegations of rape, electrocution of genitals, and other abuse separate from those incidents already cataloged in Army reports that have been leaked to the public. I bet you Josh Beckett likes that. The suit is noteworthy, however, in that it accuses the companies of not merely being negligent in supervising its employees, but using torture as part of their business strategy. Kind of like Walmart.
Oh.
The companies abused prisoners, according to the suit, because they were intent on providing intelligence of any quality to the military in order to meet quotas and win new assignments in the lucrative private interrogation business. In order to meet quotas and crank out information, they simply violated human rights, said Susan Burke, an attorney at Montgomery, Kraken, Walker, and Rhodes, who is representing the plaintiffs. Don't you like that name? Montgomery, McCracken, Walker, and Rhodes. I wonder if that's Randy Rhodes. CACI strongly rejected the allegations, calling them false and malicious. Titan said it would vigorously contest the suit. The company has said its translators were not in charge of handling prisoners. The complaint offered no details, such as conversations among CACI or Titan executives, to prove the conspiracy allegations. It also failed to identify the U.S. government officials said to have taken part in the conspiracy. Sharif Akil, another attorney for the victim, said his clients had little way of determining whether they're being abused by regular military personnel or private contractors because they often were hooded. Ms. Burke said she was hoping to comb through interrogation reports and other documents to link individuals with the alleged abuses. It's kind of like those five guys. Wasn't it five in the Daniel Berg decapitation in that video?
Or six.
Or whatever it was.
Or seven.
How are we going to identify those five or six?
Smell.
I thought they all smelled the same is what I heard. 10:56 at 5:60. That's the popular rumor. That's what I'm hearing, okay? That's what somebody told me about those raghead terrorist types. 10:56 at 560 WQM with the heat of summer here. Now is a great time to get out of that car that you've been driving and get yourself into a great new Toyota from Armstrong Toyota of Homestead. You'll find them on US 1 just 20 minutes south of the 836, and it's worth your driving down there because they're going to save you thousands on new Toyotas. And with these outrageous rising gas prices, maybe you want a car with more fuel economy, like the legendary Toyota Corolla can be yours for just $11,990 or lease it for just $209 a month. Need a great Toyota for that college or high school graduate? How about the Toyota Echo? Lease price is just $199 a month. Even George could afford that. Need a truck? The V6 Toyota Tundra regular cab can be yours for just $239 a month. If you're looking for the hottest new cars around, check out the Corolla XRS and Solera convertible. Now in stock at Armstrong Toyota of Homestead. Locally owned and operated, they treat you just like family, and they'll stand on their head, do just about anything to make you a happy customer. Their service department is even open late to late weeknights to make sure they get all your work done for you. And keep in mind that Armstrong Toyota of Homestead was the very first dealer to offer you free tires and batteries for life, and now even better, they're the first to offer you free replacement parts for life on top of that. That's right, tires, batteries, and free parts for life. Nobody even dreams of doing that for you. So instead of wasting your time and gas schlepping to all those big-name car dealers, do yourself a smart thing. See our good buddy David Rich, the GM at Armstrong Toyota of Homestead, for an honest-to-goodness unbeatable deal. Drive a little and save a lot on that great new Toyota only at Armstrong Toyota of Homestead.
And local, this is Sports Radio 560, QAM.
You go back to Canada, you Jew bastard.
Goodbye, Ronald Reagan. That's it, you're done. I hope they put in your coffin a special lining there to protect the soil from your tear. All your old pals will be there. The ones you can't remember, William Casey, Walter Slezak, and in case you haven't heard, your Iran-Contra criminals have returned. I sing this song any time somebody famous dies, we'll tell you go again. It's time for Ron to go, no matter how many times you just say no. You were outfitted by Kitty Carlisle, who's 400 years old. And now, here's a few words from your oldest friend, decrepit old Bob Dole.
Bob Dole said, goodbye, Ron Reagan. I give my regards to Nixon. May I recall back to those halcyon days of the Bonzo film, before June Allison wore tie-dye pants. I had both my hands and washed them with Barack soap. Now be joining in soon. We'll have some fun with our own pals, Everett Dirksen and John Lund. And Bob Dole says, no matter how big a star or how famous you are, you still wind up dead. You start in movies, became president, and then you turned into a tree. We held up our socks with garters like Ed McMahon.
1102 at 560. That's disrespectful. Don't be laughing now. Okay, someday you'll be older, 93. Ted Rawl writes, Reagan's shameful legacy. Well, wouldn't it be a shame if I read a bunch of these again today? Well, guess what? I'm not going to wait till the noon hour. I'm going to get them out of the way now.
That's not our good buddy Ted, whose cartoons we put on all the time,
yes.
Is it? All right.
Uh-huh. Sure is. He says, mourn for us, not the proto-Bush. For a few weeks, it became routine. I heard them dragging luggage down the hall. They paused in a little lounge near the dormitory elevator to bid farewell to people they'd met during their single semester. Those I knew knocked on my door. What are you going to do? I asked. Where are you going to go? A shrug. They were 18 years old, and their bright futures had evaporated. They had worked hard in junior and senior high school, harder than most, but none of that mattered now. President Reagan explained the form letters from the Office of Financial Aid had slashed the federal education budget, which is why the same grim tableau of shattered hopes and dreams was playing itself out across the country. Colleges and universities were evicting their best and brightest, straight-A students, stripping them of scholarships. Some transferred to less expensive community colleges, others dropped into the low-wage workforce. Now, nearly a quarter century later, they are still less financially secure and less educated than they should have been. Our nation is poorer for having denied them their potential. They were by no means the hardest-hit victims of Reaganism. Reagan's quack economics trashed scholarships and turned welfare recipients into homeless people and refused to do anything about the AIDS epidemic. Also, they could fund extravagant tax cuts for a tiny sliver of the ultra-rich. Their supply-side sales pitch that the rich would buy so much stuff from everybody else that the economy would boom and government coffers would fill up never panned out. The Reagan boom lasted just 3 years and created only low-wage jobs. When the 80s were over, we were buried in the depths of recession and $1 trillion in debt. Poverty grew, cities decayed, crime rose. It took over a decade to dig out. Reagan's defenders, people who don't know the facts or choose to ignore them, claim that everybody admired Reagan's ebullient personality, even if some disagreed with his policy. That, like the Gipper's tall tales about welfare queens and homeless-by-choice urban campers, is a lie. Millions of Americans cringed at Reagan's simplistic rhetoric, were terrified that his anti-Soviet evil empire posturing would provoke World War III, and thought that his appeal to selfishness and greed, a bastardized blend of Adam Smith and Ayn Rand, brought out the worst in us. We rolled our eyes when Reagan quipped, "There you go again." What the hell did that mean? Given that he made flying a living hell by firing air traffic controllers and regulating the airlines, I'm not the only one who refuses to call Washington National Airport by its new name. His clown-like dyed hair and rouged cheeks disgusted us. We hated him during the dark days he made so hideous, and with all due respect, we hate him still. Not everybody buys the myth that Reagan won the Cold War by demanding that Gorbachev tear down this wall, the Berlin Wall, or bankrupting the Soviet Union by the arms race, Zbigniew Brzezinski's plot to draw the Russians into the Afghan trap by funding the Mujahideen, Chernobyl, and covert U.S. schemes to destabilize the ruble had more to do with the end of the USSR. Gangsterism replaced the ossified cult of the state, millions of Russians were reduced to paupers, revived radical Islamism in Central Asia, and eliminated our sole major ideological and military rival. That increased our arrogance and insularity, left us in charge of the world under blame for everything, paving the road to 9/11. Reagan even armed the attack's future perpetrators. Anyway, the Cold War isn't over. In what direction do you think those ICBMs are pointing today? The Lionizers are correct about one thing. Reagan was one of our most influential presidents since FDR, whose New Deal state safety net he carefully disassembled. He pioneered policies now being implemented by George W. Bush, trickle-down economics, corporate deregulation, radicalizing the courts, slithering around inconvenient laws and international treaties. On the domestic front, he unraveled America's century-old social contract. What the poor needed was a kick in the ass, not a handout, said a president whose wealthy patrons bought him a house and put clothes on his wife Nancy. National parks were to be exploited for timber and oil, not protected. The federal tax code, originally conceived to redistribute wealth from top to bottom, was reformed to eradicate social justice. Bush also models his approach to foreign policy on that of the original Teflon president. Reagan elevated unjustifiable military action to an art. In 1983, anxious to look tough after cutting and running from Lebanon, Reagan sent Marines to topple the Marxist government of Grenada. His pretext for invading this Caribbean island was the urgent plight of 500 medical students supposedly besieged by rampaging mobs. But when they arrived at the airport in the U.S., the quizzical young men and women told reporters they were confused, never having felt endangered or seen any unrest. In a bizarre 1985 effort to free a few American hostages being held in Lebanon, Reagan authorized the sale of 107 tons of anti-tank and anti-aircraft missiles to Iran at a time one of our staunchest enemies, with the proceeds to be used to fund rightist death squads in Nicaragua, something Congress had expressly forbidden him to do. Evidence strongly suggests that Iran-Contra was at least his second dirty deal with Islamic Iran, the first being the October surprise, which delayed the release of the Iranian embassy hostages until after the 1980 election was over. Ronald Reagan eventually admitted to trading arms for hostages, yet avoided prosecution for treason and the death penalty. Reagan, like Bush 43, technically served in the military yet studiously avoided combat. Both men were physically robust, intellectually adequate, inadequate, poorly traveled, former governors, renowned for stabbing friends in the back. Reagan named names during McCarthyism. Both appointed former generals as secretaries of state and enemies of the environment head of the Department of the Interior. Both refused to read detailed briefings, walked short hours, worked short hours, behaved erratically in public appearances, ducked questions about sordid past, and relied on Christianist, the radical right equivalent of Islamist, depictions of foes as evil, and America invariably as embodied by himself and the Republicans as good. Based on intelligence as phony as that floated to justify the war against Iraq, Reagan bombed Muslim Libya. This is reprinted from Yahoo, Ted Rall. But he was a great, compassionate, whatever he was, right?
There you go again.
Right. Jammed up my damn fax machine over there. Boy, that's bad news. 5670560. Yeah. Oh, I got a few more of those. We don't want to overdo it, though, do we?
Yeah.
Sure we do. We can't overdo it.
Yay.
How the could you possibly counterbalance this endless spewing that just doesn't go on? And by the way, today, George W. Bush, the GA Summit, we are being Reagan and Bush to death now this week. You don't think it's just a coincidence, do you?
No.
So it's a damn good thing that 2 weeks from tomorrow, that Fahrenheit 9/11 is coming out. It's going to be released here on the same day, June 25th, Friday. I'll be watching it 3, 4, 5 times, and I'm sure you will be, too.
Oh, yeah.
No?
No.
You're not going to watch it?
Maybe a little. I'll flip. How's that?
You're not going to watch Fahrenheit 9/11?
Of course I am. What a crazy question.
Retired Miami-Dade priest arrested on sex assault charges.
Oh, my God.
Another very shocking story. Dade County prosecutors charged a retired Catholic priest with fondling a 12-year-old boy who was visiting his ailing grandmother at a nursing home in 2001. The Reverend Trevor Smith, who served in the Archdiocese of Miami for 35 years, is the first clergyman to be arrested on sex abuse offenses here in Miami. He's consistently denied the allegations. Smith, 67, surrendered at the county jail, was charged with 2 counts of lewd and lascivious assault on a minor before being released on $75,000 bail. He faces penalties of up to 30 years in jail if convicted.
Got dirty, man!
Although sentencing guidelines recommend between 2 and 3 years for each count. The charges come less than 9 months after the Archdiocese settled a 2002 lawsuit with the alleged victim and his mother for $500,000 while admitting no wrongdoing. It was the largest settlement paid by the Archdiocese, which has been hit with about 35 lawsuits alleging sexual misconduct by the clergy. The alleged incident is the only complaint against Smith, who retired in 2002 after working at several South Florida parishes and nursing homes, according to court records. Smith was the chaplain at the Villa Maria Nursing and Rehab Center in North Miami, where he allegedly invited the boy into his living quarters, showed him a picture book of naked children.
Mm.
The priest forced the boy to touch him and fondle the boy while telling him it was okay for two guys to touch each other, according to North Miami police. Neither Smith's criminal attorney, David Rabin, nor Archdiocese officials returned calls for comment from the Herald on Wednesday evening. The charges filed yesterday stem from a state attorney's office investigation into clergy abuse, which started in 2002. The investigation resulted only in Smith's arrest. State Attorney Catherine Fernandez-Rundle said statute's limitations prevented prosecutors from pursuing charges in other cases, such as those in which alleged victims reported abuse that occurred decades earlier. And believe me, there were dozens, there were hundreds, there were thousands, but the statute of limitations. That's one statue we'd like to tear down. It's that statue of limitations.
And local, this is Sports Radio 560, QAM.
Baby, I'm going to use you as a sex toy.
Here's Sylvester Stallone for GNC.
Yo, hey, I'm Sly Stallone. You thought I was all washed up, huh? Well, you were right. And that's why I've developed my own line of nutritional supplements for GNC.
GNC stands for Got No Career.
You better believe it. And that's why they got me doing what Joe Piscopo was doing for them 10 years ago. Hey, remember Joe Piscopo? I didn't think so.
You loved Stallone as Rocky. You tolerated him as Rambo. You hated him in Spy Kids 3. Now, you'll utterly despise him in his latest role as himself for GNC.
Yo, hey, go to GNC for my new energy pudding. It's great for elderly people like me who are on the go and hate the way energy bars stick to their dentures.
So if you're looking for today's best health products created by yesterday's worst action star, stop at GNC.
Or my mom was soup. Remember that flick? I didn't think so. What about Rhinestone? Well, Judge Dredd.
There's another great porn star for you. I'm sorry, it was just to Ted and Stella, and it was too embarrassing to put on her. Don't put him on her. He ain't no actor of any kind.
It wasn't me.
Here's a fact that says from Gene, the only two names I can remember, Linda Lovelace and Marilyn Chambers. Well, they both ought to be on there. We always put them on when we do this poll once a year, once every 5 minutes. Then there's a good point that he makes here. Reagan, no one seems to remember Black Tuesday, October 87, when the stock market dropped 800 points, and the SNL scandals, Neil Bush, thousands of banks went out of business, which started in 86. That's how Jeb Bush came to Florida, when Daddy put him in charge of the defaulted properties in Florida. And tomorrow the stock market is closed in Reagan's honor. What a joke! Only nobody's laughing. That's the sad part. Nobody's laughing. A sick joke. Excellent fact, Gene. Thank you. So much bad crap happened while he was in. And we never even got to the thing. One of the articles I read yesterday talked about California when he was governor. Well, as president, one of the cutbacks that they made in social programs was the mental institutions all across the country. And anybody that was ever even in New York, much less lived there in the 80s when he was president, there were more nut jobs on the street corners all over the city. I mean, it was unbelievable because he opened up the mental institutions and they closed them all down so that everybody was out on the street. Anybody from New York, I'm sure, remembers that. Barbara Dare says, Dave, my favorite porn actress. She once had a scene with Peter North. That was, it says...
Squirt, squirt.
Amazing is what it says here. One can only even begin to imagine that. Here's one. It says, I love when you do this poll. Now, I can't read this name. Johann Pollock? See, it's bad. Is it P-O-U-L-I-K? Because I did do a search. It says, do a web search. You'll agree, Neil. It also says, drool, slurp, et cetera, and so on. In fact, it looks like there's a little slurpy right on this fax. But at any rate, I don't know who that is. We've got to figure out that. Is it P-O-U-L-I-K or P-O-V or Pavlov and his dog? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
It looks like hopefully. P-A-U-L-I-K.
Yeah.
But it
well,
could
I
be
did that. P-A-U?
Could be a
P-on
V.
U?
I don't know. That's sloppy.
That's what Josh Beckett said.
It's slurpy.
P-A-U-L-I-K. Okay, Johann, I'm doing a search right now, okay? Ah, there it is. Johann Pollock videos. You can actually read that?
Well, I was just guessing.
Well, you're right. Good guess. Oh, you should have said, oh, I know who that is. But then, of course, people would talk.
Gay.
I don't see anything. I clicked on where it says, oh, Triple X videos. Well, we don't want to see that. Oh, no. Oh, God. In fact, my computer just froze up. See? It must be really smoking, okay?
Squirt's working. Pervo.
Yeah. Just froze up. 5670560. Pound. Oh, no, wait, it didn't freeze up. It was just working on it, slowly but surely. And now it just got a yellow screen. God only knows what's going to be coming up on there next. WQAM, hello.
Yes, say, can I speak to Neil?
Speaking.
Neil.
Yeah.
I got a name for the poll.
Okay.
How about one that George might remember, possibly. I think he's the same age as me. Latin sensation Vanessa Del Rio.
I remember Vanessa Del Rio vividly, yes.
Yes, vivid, absolutely. And
vivid and massive.
Yes, she unfortunately married a nice Jewish girl, and she doesn't perform quite up to Vanessa's standards, but...
Just come out of practice makes perfect.
That's it. That's it. Hey, it's funny. I say that to her on a regular basis. Love the show, Neil.
Okay, thanks a lot. Practice makes perfect, especially with his credit cards.
I
just got off of that thing. I went, huh?
Del Rio. I remember thinking, how did they let this ugly bitch onto the set?
Oh, now that's terrible to say that. She had a big set.
Yeah, she did.
Well, there you go. That's all accounted back in the day. What's her name? Marilyn Chambers. She was Linda Lovelace was attractive, I would say. She wasn't bad.
In her day, right.
Back in the day, right. Well, I mean, Vanessa Del Rio wasn't much after that. Vanessa Del Rio, I would say, was like 70s. I don't know any of their names, 57. Jenna Jameson, 41. I don't watch porno, 25. 13.2% of this audience says they don't want porno. Do we believe them? Tracy Lords, 22. Christy Canyon, 13. Oh, that must be the John Ashcroft crowd. Bandy Woods, 7. Nikita Denise, 5. Nikki Dial, 5. Nikita Khrushchev. Chasey Lane, 5. Ginger Lynn's got 5. Peter North, 3. And none yet for Rocco Cifaretti. Linda Lovelace and Marilyn Chambers with an S. I guess Eric's going to have to cover your S with that.
I guess so.
Yeah. Reagan played a decisive role in Saddam Hussein's survival in Iran-Iraq War. Here's another one. This is from the Agence France Press. Oh, you're not going to read a whole bunch of these again today, are you?
Yeah.
You bet your ass I am. If I had 100 of them, I'd read them all. Because I am so freaking disgusted with this media brainwashing of the public and this revisionist history now, making them into this godlike figure. I mean, you know, if they would have handled this properly, I wouldn't feel the Spirit of Christ wouldn't have compelled me to read all of this honest but negative stuff. But because of the way that they're carrying on like crazy here, I mean, somebody has to say something, even though here we are on the air on some scratchy sports station in Miami, you know, and nobody ain't listening. As Americans mourn the passing of President Ronald Reagan, almost forgotten is the decisive part his administration played in the survival of Iraq's President Saddam Hussein through his 8-year war with Iran. U.S. soldiers now fighting the remnants of Saddam's regime can look back to the early 80s for the start of a relationship that fostered the rise of the largest military in the Middle East, one whose use of chemical weapons set the stage for last year's war. Reagan, determined to check arch foe Iran, opened a backdoor to Iraq through which flowed U.S. intelligence and hundreds of millions of dollars in loan guarantees, even as Washington professed neutrality in Baghdad's war with Tehran. It was complemented by French weaponry and German dual-use technology that experts say wound up in Iraq's chemical and biological warfare programs. Donald Rumsfeld, then Reagan's special Middle East envoy, is credited with establishing the back channel to Saddam on his secret trip to Baghdad in December of 83. Washington had plenty of motives to help Saddam stave off an Iranian victory. Not only was the U.S. still smarting from the 1980 hostage-taking at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, but its embassy and marine barracks in Beirut had been struck with truck bombings earlier in 83. In fact, the U.S. had begun to tilt in favor of Baghdad even before Rumsfeld's arrival in Baghdad. In February of 82, the State Department dropped Baghdad from its list of state sponsors of terrorism, clearing the way for aid and trade. A month later, Reagan ordered a review of U.S. policy in the Middle East, which resulted in a marked shift in favor of Iraq over the next year. Soon thereafter, Washington began passing high-value military intelligence to Iraq to help it fight the war, including information from U.S. satellites that helped fix key flaws in the fortifications protecting al-Basra that proved important in Iran's defeat in the next month, wrote Kenneth Pollack in his recently published book, The Threatening Storm. Economic aid poured into Iraq in the form of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of loan guarantees to buy U.S. agricultural products, indirectly aiding the war effort. Sales of UH-1H helicopters and Hughes MD-500 Defender helicopters were approved by Washington. Though sold as civilian aircraft, nobody objected when they were quickly converted for military use. A May 9, 1984 memo unearthed by the National Security Archive, a Washington research organization, noted that U.S. policy for the sale of dual-use equipment to Iraq's nuclear program was also reviewed. The memo said its preliminary results favor expanding such trade to include Iraq nuclear entities. By March of 1985, the United States was issuing Baghdad export permits for high-tech equipment crucial for its weapons of mass destruction programs, according to Pollack. U.S. allies were also active in Iraq. By 1982, Iraq accounted for 40% of French arms exports, wrote Pollack, Pollack. Paris sold Baghdad a wide range of weapons, including armored vehicles, air defense radar, surface-to-air missiles, Mirage fighters, and Exocet anti-ship missiles. German firms also rushed in without much compunction, not only selling Iraq large numbers of trucks and automobiles, but also building vast complexes for Iraq's chemical warfare, biological warfare, and ballistic missile programs, he wrote. The aid came despite clear evidence as early as mid-83 that Iraq was using chemical weapons on Iranian forces. Washington said nothing publicly, but noted almost daily Iraqi use of chemical weapons in internal reports, but said nothing publicly. We've received reports of additional information confirming Iraqi use of chemical weapons, a November 1, 83 State Department memo said. We also know that Iraq has acquired a CW production capability, primarily from Western firms, including possibly a U.S. foreign subsidiary. It said our best present chance of influencing cessation of CW use may be in the context of informing Iraq of these measures. Washington did not publicly denounce Iraqi use of chemical weapons until March 84, after it was documented in the UN study. The Reagan administration opened full diplomatic relations with Baghdad in November 84. Iraqi chemical attacks continued not only on Iranian forces, but also on Kurdish civilians, notably at Halabja in 1987. For its support, Pollack wrote, Washington got a bulwark against Iran, cheap oil, and Iraqi support for peace negotiations with Israel. But even when the Iraq-Iran war ended, Baghdad was left with huge debts and a large and menacing military looking for easy prey. So there you go. Maybe we ought to pray, huh? Even an old heathen bastard like me, maybe we ought to pray because
God.
At this point, the way the media just continues with this bullcrap, it's just endless. It's like just a spewing that just won't stop every time you turn on your TV set. Although, thank God, now they're a commercial break. Aren't we pleased? In fact, now we're just begging to see those spots. Even MSNBC is in a commercial break. Oh, hallelujah. Keep them coming. Put on some infomercials for crying out loud. Probably be selling Kiwi shoe polish in honor of Reagan. Matthew Rothschild in The Progressive writes, no praise for Reagan. He says, spare me the heapings of praise for Ronald Reagan. He was one of the worst presidents we've ever had. In fact, he should have been impeached for the Iran-Contra scandal, and he might have been had Congress and the media just done their jobs. Reagan misappropriated funds, then he lied about it. He traded with Iran, an enemy of the U.S., and he lied about that, too. But Congress went weak in the knees when Ollie North showed up strutting in his uniform. And the media fell down, too. Catherine Graham, owner of the Washington Post, said the country couldn't handle another impeachment crisis, and so the Post downplayed it. Let's be clear on Reagan's record. Reagan was responsible for killing tens of thousands of innocent people in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Honduras as he waged illegal wars and funded brutal militaries. The Truth Commission in El Salvador investigated the murders of 75,000 people during the Civil War in the 80s, and it found that the Salvadorian military, or death squads connected to the military, had committed the bulk of those crimes. At the time, Bush was lavishing hundreds of millions of dollars on the Salvadorian government, and his CIA was working with the death squads. Reagan was responsible, as Christopher Hitchens has noted, for approving Israel's invasion of Lebanon, which killed about 18,000 civilians. Reagan was responsible for his own unilateral invasion of that huge threat to the U.S. called Grenada, oh, the great liberator. Reagan was responsible for inciting a racist backlash. He kicked off his 1980 presidential campaign in, of all places, Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Andrew Goodman, Michael Schwarmer, and James Cheney were murdered in 1964. Reagan also fueled racism with his stories about welfare queens and his defense of the apartheid regime of South Africa. Reagan was responsible for attacking women's rights as he tried to legitimate the backlash against feminism. He appointed the far-right Justice Antonin Scalia to the Supreme Court, and he loaded the lower court benches with anti-choice ideologues. Reagan was responsible for a woeful response to the AIDS epidemic, which needlessly jeopardized the lives of millions of people. He also consorted with Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, who called AIDS divine revenge on homosexuals. Reagan was responsible for shredding the social contract between labor and management and declared open season on trade unions when he fired the air traffic controllers. Reagan was responsible for flattening out the progressive income tax for giving huge tax breaks to the wealthiest Americans and to corporations. His economic policies, as Mark Weisbrot of the Center for Economic Policy and Research has noted, dramatically redistributed income to the rich. He was Robin Hood in reverse, taking money from the poor, giving it to the rich. Reagan was responsible for hooking millions of people overseas on tobacco as he turned the Commerce Department into the advance team for Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds. Reagan, we begin bombing in 5 minutes, was responsible for the multi-billion-dollar boondoggle that goes by the name of missile defense. Reagan was responsible for launching an assault on our environment, member James Watt, that is now reaching its apotheosis under George W. In a way, Reagan was W.'s father. The macho swagger, the studied anti-intellectualism, the infatuation with military spending, and the overriding concern for corporations and the rich, all these Bushes inherited from Reagan. All the while, Reagan consulted Nancy's astrologer for advice. Bush does him one better by consulting the Lord himself. The only difference is that Reagan knew how to read his lines.
Live and local, this is 560. The radio's all yours now. QAM.
All over the joint, do you hear?
We have an elevator that goes up to the suite and an elevator that goes down to the street.
It's funny, he's on a hit show.
You're fired.
The apprentice.
It's over. Don't you think it's over? Who chose this stupid concept? And the money somewhere disappeared between the hand and the ass.
He says you're five, Donald Trump. Gets his wish.
You're fired. Up to the suite, down to the street. Good luck. You're fired. I think your concept is terrible.
At this stage of your job interview, I am not impressed.
So ask yourself, what do work to do?
You're fired.
Trump's relentless. Cause it's his life.
You're fired.
But Donald cares.
I'll see you back at the board. I may just fire all of you.
Oh, and whoever sent this fax about Johann Pollock, you're fired too. I mean, brother, you talk about a nasty-looking queen. My God. I wouldn't touch him with your tongue. How do you like that?
Well, you can't borrow it.
Oh, God. Gag me with a spoon. Yeah, slurp, all right. I'm slurping puke is what I'm slurping, at any rate. Hey, listen, there are just a lot of people with a bad eyesight, I guess, or just bad taste. But you can put him on there. Did we put him on there already?
I guess. Josh, you're not already in an emergency.
That'll give that guy somewhere to go. Here's some good news. Democrat John Kerry's got a solid lead over President Bush among voters nationwide, according to an L.A. poll, L.A. Times poll today. That cited widespread increase unease over the country's direction, Iraq policies, and the economy. Kerry led Bush by 51-44% nationally in a two-way matchup, according to the poll of 230 registered voters taken from Saturday to Tuesday. The figures dropped, though, with Ralph Nader in the mix. Kerry had 48, Bush 42, and let's see, that would leave, well, whatever it is. Doesn't say what Nader got, because there's always that undecided bunch. Mm-hmm. Majorities disapproved of Bush's handling of the economy in Iraq, despite encouraging news on both. Recently, the poll said 56% of respondents said America needs to move in a new direction because Bush's policies have not improved the country. However, an indication of the race's volatility, the newspaper's polling in three first or contested states shows the Republican president with a double-digit advantage over Kerry in Missouri, with Nader included, and running even with a pressured Democratic rival, with a presumed Democratic rival in Ohio and Wisconsin. However, majorities in each state say the country should change direction. Now, do you understand that?
No.
And we ought to change direction, so let's put Bush in again. I don't get it. Normally, 55% of respondents nationally disapproved of how Bush was handling Iraq, while 44% approved of it. How do you like that? 55 negative, 44% positive in Iraq. On the economy, 54% didn't approve of the job he was doing, 43% did. But anyway, here's a fact from Dan. It says, I should be working, but I know there's a great Tyrone Powers movie on AMC right now. It's got Lloyd Nolan, too. I just don't give a heck, like the Staples say, about all that political crap at the moment. Well, what does that mean?
I don't know. I was hoping you could tell me.
I should be working, I know, but there's a great Tyrone Power movie on AMC right now. It's got Lloyd Nolan, too. I just don't give a heck, like the Staples say, about all that political crap at the moment. Whatever you say, Dan, okay? Maybe he's trying to say you don't like what we're talking about, or you don't like what's on the TV. I don't know what he's talking about. Have a great life, Dan, okay?
I have no life.
Yeah, obviously. He still took time out from his busy schedule to give us that fax. Maybe you can give us a follow-up and let us know what the hell you're talking about. I love people that talk like in code, in like mumbo-jumbo. 5670, although I do like gumbo, but not too much mumbo-jumbo. WQAM, hello.
Fuck you.
Excellent. I think that was somebody from Channel 7. It was probably Jackie Is Johnson's boyfriend. 5670560, pound 560. That was the one I called before about me and who was in Michael Moore.
Oh.
Same schmuck. Same spaz hole. WQAM, hello.
Neil.
Yes, sir, speaking.
Okay, Neil, I agree with you about Reagan, whether it be his economic policies or his foreign policy or whatever, but there is one thing that I give Reagan credit for every year. Before he came into office, daylight savings time went from the last weekend of April till the first weekend of October, and he extended it to the first weekend of April.
Well, there you go. Nobody can be all bad. Excellent point.
Exactly. I love him for that.
Well, let's write that on his tombstone.
He gave me 7 more weeks of daylight.
What's not to like? Okay, thanks for the good news, Pally. See? Wasn't all bad. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon Wireless line. What are you and Michael Morgan? See, those are the people that I love the most. The best, because they can't discuss any of these substances, any of the things that are going on, including even
Abu Ghraib,
all of that. So what they do, and I'm still thinking about that guy that called about this time yesterday. He kind of cured me on a whole idea of life. I don't know, he just was sad.
Yeah?
The guy that called about the torture and about, well, shouldn't, right. You know, if we had a chance to torture Mohammed Atta.
Right.
Anything
we do is okay. And
right, that's right. Anything we do is okay. And all those people over there, all those brown people. It used to be the red people when we were going after the Indians. Now it's the brown people.
Because,
and, of course, it was always the black people, the dark colors.
See, we're the good guys, so anything we do is good.
There you go. Sounds simplistic enough to me. Even W can figure that out. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon Wireless line. Your favorite porno actor or actress of all time. We've got an impressive list, an array. WQAM, hello.
Hey, Neil, how you doing?
Yes, sir.
Bedtime for Bonzo, huh?
That's it.
Yeah. Does anybody recall President Reagan saying, I can't recall, lying to the American public on TV?
Yeah, many times.
Yeah. I don't know. This is such too much, you know?
Too much is too much. You're right.
And my favorite porn star is Paris Hilton. Got to put her on the list.
No chance.
She's
not a porn star.
Well, she was for a day.
Because somebody makes a porno movie or a sex movie doesn't make them a porn star. She's not a porno actress. You see, this is what really frosts my ass, you know?
Yeah, she wasn't acting either.
No. who is your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? Now, if we would have said, who is your favorite person that was ever in a porno film, well, that would have been different, right? Is that the question?
No. Whoever had
in addition to which, she's a skank. She's scabby. Man, what is with you guys? Seriously. We got to upgrade some of your taste a little bit. Man, oh, man, a Shevitz. She is nasty. She makes Monica Lewinsky look like Marilyn Monroe. That's how skanky Paris Hilton is. She is a scab.
Well, don't go say nothing you can't take back now.
Right. 567-0560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon wireless line. I think, I don't know any of their names which is leading. I think that's probably part of the problem here. Don't you?
Yeah, and my choice isn't on there.
Because I would say, like, for the last 20 years, that's probably the case. WQAM, hello.
Hey, Neil.
Yes, sir.
Jackie Johnson's leading us.
I know that.
That's not good.
Why not?
Because what else are we going to watch the news for?
Maybe for some real news, and maybe, like, you make your brain work, you bozo, you dumbo. You want to watch pornography, pop a porno DVD in there, okay? If you want to find out what's going on in the world, then watch the real news, okay, which you'll never get on Channel 7 anyway. So what are you watching that crap for anyway? Desperado is what we're talking about. Super desperado. Oh, Jackie. He's one of those people I was talking about before. They're always hyperventilating. Oh, Jackie. There's Jackie John. Big stinking deal, okay? You can go out to the shopping mall and see better than her any day of the week. Look out the window. Hope no matter where the hell you live, within 5 minutes you'll see somebody a hell of a lot hotter than that bitch. Oh, Jackie. She's on television. Therefore, she must be hot. By the way, do you know Jackie Johnson's going to L.A.? She's leaving us, and guess what? That's not good.
We're Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Hi.
It puts the lotion in the basket.
That's what the old Pollock is supposed to have said. And they said, oh, he never said that. In fact, he doesn't say anything we can understand anyway. Dominus Nabiscus. He don't like Nabisco either, as a matter of fact. He said that he only likes food that you can gum at this stage of his life. The Pope. At any rate, it's kind of a sad thing that all of this, like I said, just like when the Pope came to Cuba that time and everybody's carrying on and Christiana Amanpour, whatever the hell her name is. Oh, and the Holy Father. See, well, what business has he got telling anybody who's not a Catholic what the hell they ought to be doing? Mind your own business, Pops, okay? And by the way, the outfit sucks. Man, go get yourself a better beanie. You're looking like crap with all that money you guys have got over there. Go sell some of that porno you're hiding in the Vatican. Brother, I bet you they could answer this question today.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's what it says. Just heard a story on WIOD. What? Boy, some of these people, man, are really getting to me today.
WIOD? Oh, I hate that station.
That our newly found friend in the war against terror, Gaddafi, and the Libyan government. I saw that story this morning. That's nothing new. We're taking part in a plot to assassinate the leader of Saudi Arabia. Sure, it's in all the papers this morning. This is after he decided to come clean and rejoin the rest of the civilized world. I say more power to him if he wants to assassinate the leader of Saudi Arabia.
All right.
Yeah, we ought to help him out. Right?
Yeah.
Amen. At any rate, silly facts. Republicans upset over Bush plan to use Reagan images in speeches and campaign ads. This Capitol Hill Blue, by the way, is an excellent website. Nice going, Eric. We know you can do it. As a matter of fact, once Josh takes over the full-time job putting all those bedtime stories on her, you can just spend hours and hours every day scouring the World Wide Wicked Web for more new great websites like Capitol Hill Blue. It's great. Well, there you go. Ron Jeremy for your poll. Now, they got a good point here. It says he gave hope to all of us fat slobs. If he can get laid, then anybody can. Excellent choice there, Gregory in Coral Springs. Ron Jeremy, he'll get a lot of votes. Don't ask me why, but he'll get them. I think this last guy has his thumb on it. As the nation prepares to bury former President Ronald Reagan, what's in the box? Republican insiders fight among themselves over plans by the political team of President George W. Bush to use images and speeches of Reagan in new TV ads aimed at jump-starting a faltering campaign. They're disgusting, says one longtime Republican who participated in a focus group to preview the new TV ads. They dishonor the memory of Ronald Reagan, and if President Bush allows these ads on the air, I, for one, will not vote for him in November. To which we say,
all right.
The ads ordered up by a Bush political advisor, Karl Rove, immediately after Reagan's death last Saturday, use images of Reagan and excerpts from his speeches in what one angry GOP conservative describes as a callous attempt to tie George W. Bush to the legacy of Ronald Wilson Reagan. One proposed ad even goes so far as to show Reagan saying, George, go out and win one for the Gipper. The clip comes from Reagan's speech to the 1988 Republican National Convention, where the former president's request was to Bush's father, George Herbert Walker Bush, in a successful 88 run for president. I cannot believe our party would stoop to using Mr. Reagan's memory for such political gain, says another Republican who's heard about but not seen the ads. This goes way beyond any moral or ethical bounds. Well, why should they change now, right?
Right.
Moral and ethics, who the hell's got that in this crowd? As anger toward the proposed ad campaign builds, GOP leaders are urging the White House to scrap the campaign and destroy the ads before they become public. Oh, we want to see them. One longtime GOP consultant told Rove he was a G-damned idiot for even considering putting the ads on the air, a damned idiot. Conservative Republicans already are unhappy with President Bush, the consultant said. When questioned by Capitol Hill Blue, it won't take much to make them stay home on Election Day. And there'll be a chorus coming from all of them saying, Hubbam and Dreard. National polls show Bush clearly in trouble with voters. The new L.A. Times poll, we just had that. The sliding poll numbers sent the Bush campaign media team into overdrive over the weekend to get the ads ready to show to focus groups on Tuesday, but found the reaction overwhelmingly negative, campaign insiders say. Many Republicans already are nervous about the extreme negativity that the Bush campaign is engaged in so early in the campaign, said one GOP strategist. Never before has an incumbent president gone so negative so early against an opponent, following that with the cynical use of a former president that so many Republicans revere is not just unwise, it's just plain dumb and stupid. Stupid.
Absolutely.
Former First Lady Nancy Reagan has sent a message to the White House expressing her extreme displeasure at any attempt to use her late husband as a campaign tool in the presidential campaign. That doesn't surprise me, says a GOP operative who served in the Reagan White House. Nancy doesn't like President Bush. If he's smart, he'll tell Rove to burn the ads. George W. Bush doesn't want Nancy Reagan as a public enemy. She'll put that red dress back on again and say, just say
no
to George W. Bush. Some GOP consultants, however, defend the ads as necessary as a tool in what's becoming an increasingly tough campaign. A presidential campaign is war, says one, and in a war you do whatever it takes to win, no matter how dishonest, no matter how crass, no matter how grotesque.
Even torture.
Right. As in
Abu Ghraib.
But political scientist George Harley says the Bush campaign is stepping on too many toes that it's going to need in November. Ronald Reagan has achieved a godlike status among conservative Republicans, and you don't mess with his memory. He says if they're smart, they'll pull the plug on the campaign, order the ads destroyed. Unfortunately, the Bush campaign has not yet impressed us with its intelligence. In other words, if they're smart, they would do it. But guess what? They ain't too smart. Well, we'll see. We'll see if you see those ads. And if you do, it could be bad news. So how do you like that? I bet you Nancy's also porked off about that deal with stem cell research about Laura Bush coming out the other day, and instead of shutting up her yap, jumping on a bandwagon, oh, we can't support that. Even though Laura Bush's father also died of Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, but he's in heaven now.
And speaking of that, Dick Meyer, who writes for CBS News, has got a great article here. It's not all that long. For those people who do revere Ronald Reagan, I still can't understand why, but nevertheless, a Reagan honor stem cell research, writes Dick Meyer. He says, instead of bumping Alexander Hamilton off the $10 bill or concocting a way to put Ronald Reagan on Mount Rushmore, let's pay tribute to the 40th president by taking the shackles of censorship and fear off stem cell research. This would be a profound living legacy that would instantly tell millions of families and patients coping with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease, diabetes, and spinal cord injuries that their government is no longer ignoring rational research into these conditions. Even before Reagan's death, there was new pressure on President Bush to reverse his 2001 decision that federal funds could only be used on already existing stem cell lines. The source of that pressure was Nancy Reagan, who began speaking out in support of full funding for stem cell research recently. It'll be an uphill battle. This week, the current First Lady appeared on a morning talk show, stated her own opposition to full funding of stem cell research, but politically, the tide may have turned. Last month, 206 House members wrote Bush urging him to change course, and now 58 senators, including 14 Republicans, have done the same. From any wider view, it's folly to think that the genetic genie can be put back into the bottle. The science will come from other countries and from American scientists using private funds, but the results will come more slowly, and suffering that may be preventable will not be prevented. The morality that worships the sanctity of life in the form of blastocysts, freshly fertilized eggs composed of a few cells, is willing to condemn other life, condemns it to suffering to preventable death. No one's personal liberty will be infringed by stem cell research. If stem cell science were to be unshackled in this country, anyone with moral or religious objections could simply refrain from donating sperms or eggs, or even from benefiting from medical breakthroughs that may come. But their argument is that the sanctity of life will still be violated, and society shouldn't allow that. But we can allow the death penalty and send soldiers to death in war. I don't think society should allow medical science to be censored because of the beliefs of a few. I don't think it's moral to ignore potential cures for great suffering. We have the medical know-how to keep an Alzheimer's patient alive for years and years, but we don't have the science to give that patient a mind, dignity, identity, a life. Is it moral to withhold the government's money from the search for a solution to that? I think not. We can now keep a quadriplegic alive for decades, but is it moral to censor the science that could someday regenerate those severed connections? To worry that stem cell research will inexorably lead to Frankenstein mad science is distinctly un-Reagan-esque, indeed un-American. Remember Star Wars? Ronald Reagan had a faith in American ingenuity so immense that he thought it could protect us from the Soviet arsenal. That may have been naive, but the pessimism of the opponents of stem cell research is paranoid. President Bush, supposedly the heir of Reagan's optimism, should look back in history to look forward to with more hope. Another lesson from Ronald Reagan, change course. He did. The crusader for tax cutting actually raised taxes many times after the massive cuts of 81. With luck, Bush is not so glued to his father's mantra that he keeps repeating, stay the course. Ronald Reagan was the master of timing. Let's hope President Bush has some of that, too. Are we hoping for it? Yes. Is it going to happen?
No.
No, no chance. No chance because he can't afford to alienate those religionists on the right, on the far right, this so-called compassionate conservative. Where's the companion? Wasn't he the guy that was going to, like, we were talking about all this divisive politics of hate and division, and he was going to be the great uniter and the great healer, all of that crap?
Yes.
Just like John Kerry said when he thought that the mic was off that time, he's never seen a more mean-spirited, nasty, miserable bunch of mumsers in his life, and he was, of course...
Absolutely correct, sir.
And by the way, is he still around, John Kerry, or has he gone back into the closet again?
I ain't seen him lately.
Look at this. Oh, yeah, and this fax, by the way, makes a good point. It says, please play Geldy noise over the Panther ticket promotion. Who do we believe if there's no season, says Jeff. P.S. There are lots of great stickers and shirts at whitehouse.org, and there's one of them right on here that obviously I can't read. It says, lick right. And beat.
Yeah.
But at any rate, yeah, the Panther promo, I don't want to pee on their parade, although Josh Beckett would like it. But, I mean, what the hell are we talking about here? The National Hockey League, all these teams, including the Panthers, I don't want to single them out, but I will. You want our money, and you want us to go buying tickets. Now, I'll do it. I already sent the money in because the station reimburses me. That's part of my deal. So it's not going to cost me any money. But at this point, if I'm pretty dang sure that there ain't going to be no season next year, I don't care if they got the 12-pack, the 6-pack, the 85-pack, the 500-pack. You know what I'm saying? You know, to me, it's kind of like Jim Baker again, selling something that doesn't exist. If there's going to be a season, let us know, okay? And then people will buy. But trying to give people's money, like on if it's like going to a restaurant. Hey, pay us for a great, delicious, juicy steak. Now, we don't happen to have any in the kitchen right now, but we'll go out and see if we can't find a nice cow out somewhere running around loose on the highway on 95.
Right. Trust us.
Yeah, trust us, and we'll be back in a couple of hours, and we'll cook you up a beautiful steak.
In the meantime,
we'd like you to pay up front, yes?
Oh, I'm sending you a very short but very good tax.
Okay.
Good print.
Okay. Don't forget, join QM in the Real Yellow Pages from Bell South this afternoon from noon to 1 at Action Carpet at 10791 Southwest 184th Street, Miami. Stop by to pick up tickets to an upcoming Marlins home game. That's in just a few minutes, noon today. I bet you Miguel will be there, right?
I reckon.
Or somebody who looks like Miguel. Join QM in a Marlins tonight at 7 for a Marlins watch party. Stop by and watch it at the Hollywood Ale House located in the Oakwood Plaza. Stop by to win prizes from Billy the Marlin and the Mermaids. That's at 7 tonight at the Hollywood Ale House.
Live and local, this is Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Hey, I'm Frau Eliana Ross Leitman, and I like scrubbing my smelly gorilla ass with soap made from jewels and listening to the new Roque Comunista Hour. Sit down!
This is the Jody Show. The Jody Show. The Jody Show. We daily talk about sports and more. There's Caroline, but we're not sure what she's here for. The comedy.
You got a little sports related. You were the anchors. Yes, I am the goat.
Heavily promoted when this bitch is around. The morning tries to close. This is the Seagull's Big Show. Jody Show, Doc. The Jody Show. I'm gonna change the face of sports radio, cause now I'm the voice of the Panthers and an elephant of modern radio. Oh boy! I got lots to do here, like talk to the same three callers about sports and sports and sports. I even got lots of hilarious comedy bits.
Coach Coker, Coach Coker, I'm a Coker head.
Take that, Mo. That old cocker. Stop. I'm the star now with my own 2 solid hours of spots. You're washed up. Now you're the bum. You can't hit me no more. You can't hit me, Mo.
What do you think? I can't hear you? You're on the radio, you moron.
Oh, hi, Mo.
Hey, look, maybe I was a little out of line. The things I said hit you like that.
Yeah, you were. And I'm not gay.
Sure, I know. In all fairness, that big fat old guy they stuck me with kisses me like you used to do, but he's not you.
That's so sweet. You make me almost want to come back with you.
Guilty. Yesterday my life was filled with joy. Guilty. And now I'm stuck with a guava-loving goy. You're my best sidekick and foil. I miss how you talk like a goyle. Guilty, your sport holds you. I miss you.
Oh, no. That kid, I'll come back. You mock me mean. Momo. I ain't going to get smacked on the show next week. Pack a sandwich and have a good time while you're waiting on the unemployment line.
Why, you little man, call me a bum. I'll show you the fuck. Are you upstarts? You interloper!
Come on, it's past noon. We got the Mad Dog at 2. We got Humper at 4 in the studio. 6:30, it's Marlins on deck. Marlins at the Indians. Not a good night last night, but you can't win them all. Marlins at the Indians, 7:05, Eddie K. after the baseball game. That's the agenda. Here's a fact, the one you were talking about, I'm sure. It says, I think Reagan's picture should go on food stamps. It would be most appropriate. Yes. Yeah, he wasn't too crazy about welfare queens or any other queens either. He just didn't like queens. I guess except that ballet dancing son. Right? Well, he just wasn't too big on queens, is what his thing was, whether they were welfare queens, screaming queens, flaming queens, or just in general. Our good friend Adam Rubin, whoever he is, from MoveOn.org, has got a little update on that one that I read the other day. It says, a secret Bush administration memo was recently unearthed dictating cuts in a federal budget for next year, cuts in education, child care, children's health insurance, other critical programs, and all to save money to pay for more tax cuts for the wealthy. The White House brushed the memo off, saying it was simply a statistical exercise, but now they're telling federal agencies to prepare for cuts to these draconian levels. Maybe we can bring back ketchup as a vegetable. How can we stop these cuts from going into effect? By talking to our neighbors about what the Bush administration really is doing to our country and then making sure they vote. That's why it says we've organized the second National Election Action Day this Saturday, June 12th, which sounds like this Saturday, day after tomorrow. Thousands of us are going to hit the streets to educate and or registered voters. We need your help. By coming out, you can double or triple your own impact on the election, and there's a link where you can sign up now. It says, nervous about talking to other voters in person? Don't be. After our first election action day, our members said it was more fun, easier than they thought it would be. About 90% of the people who came said that you would do it again. But to win, we need even more people involved, so please come. And again, it's got a link to the click and this and yada, yada, yada. So there you go. That's got a thing from Paul Krugman article. That I already read on the air. See, it's a good thing that I read some of these on the air ahead of time so I don't have to do it again.
But all that reading, though, Neil, it's so ponderous. I'm watching Bedtime for Bonzo now.
Or is that Nap Time for Bonzo? He sure took a lot of those. How come nobody's talking about his trip to Bitburg?
Huh?
Remember that?
No.
Oh, yeah. Well, he wasn't there. Were to where the concentration camp was. He made a trip to Bitburg, and people were all bent out of shape about that. But then again, when you're dealing with Nazis, why the hell shouldn't they be at Bitburg? Well, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon wireless line. Our poll question, which we seem to be getting away from, well, I have 100 more names on there, to have no fear. Got a long way to go. Although Wolf Blitzkrieg is on there talking about
any behind-the-scenes information you're getting from French officials, why President Chirac decided not to do this?
We've been told simply that he believes he needs to get back for pressing business and that he also believes it is more appropriate for his predecessor to go. Other leaders...
There you go. He ain't going to the funeral and neither is Paul Martin. But everybody else is. I mean, what do they need them for? Is it now? Is this going to be like a litmus test? If you don't attend the Reagan funeral, then you're a bad guy and you're part of old Europe and all this other crap again? Because I saw there was Bush just patting Chirac on the ass there this morning. They were high-fiving each other and everything. Who is your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? I don't know any of their names. 182, rather. 82, 24%. They just like what they're seeing. Jenna Jameson, 66. Tracy Lords, 43. I don't watch porno, 37, 10.8%. Don't believe you. Christy Canyon, 29. Ginger Lynn, 16. Bambi in the Woods has got 8. She was pristine, man. Chasey Lane, 8. Vanessa Del Rio, 7. CE of Little Faith.
Yeah, whatever.
Maybe she's probably going to, if she ever runs into you, probably hit you with a chalupa.
Probably.
Nikki Dow, 7. Peter North, 6. Rocco Cifaretti, 5. Linda Lovelace, 5. Nikita Denise, 5. Barbara Dare, 4. Raylene, whoever the hell that is, 3. Jonathan Pollock's got a pair. Oh, man. What a flaming, ridiculous, silly-ass, ugly queen. And Ron Jeremy, 1 out of 341 votes. WQAM, hello.
Yes,
sir.
Can I speak to Neil?
Speaking. Yes, you got him.
Okay. Did you, I just tuned in. Did you see Mike Mayo's article in
Sacramento? Yes, I did, sir, and it's just fine. Okay, you're too old to talk on the show, but it was just fine. We saw Mike Mayo's column, and I'm not going to read it because it restates all of the things we said in the other columns that I read, and the Sun Sentinel is right there in your hand, so you read it to yourself, and I'm not going to read it on the air. It was just fine. Nice call, Mike Mayo. Yada, yada, yada. Okay, good job. All had to be said. I'm sure it was inspired by this show. WQAM, hello. WQAM, hello.
Porn.
WQAM, hello.
Yeah, Neil, Asia Carrera. Don't forget about the Asian babe.
Asia Carrera?
Asia Carrera, yep.
What kind of a name is that for an Asian, Carrera?
Asia Carrera. That's
okay,
it.
Got it. That sounds like Reverend Jones. 5670560, don't put that on there. I have no idea who the hell I was. Pound 560, do you know who that is?
Yeah, I've heard of her.
Oh, you have?
Mm-hmm.
Well, put her on there, like I said. Well, what kind of a name is that? Probably fake.
Made up porn name.
Can't stand people with fake names like...
Hey, oh, God!
WQAM, hello.
Yes, I'm trying to reach Neil.
You're reaching him.
Oh, good. I wanted to add, I had a name for your list.
Go right ahead.
Paul Barresi.
Paul Barresi?
Yep.
Who the hell's that?
He was in a number of films, and it was rumored, he was the one that was rumored to have had a relationship with John Travolta.
Oh, my God, now we're talking. I like him better already. Thank you very much. Or maybe I like him less. I'm not really sure. It all depends on how you look at it. A relationship with John Travolta? What are you trying to say?
Oh, my God.
Just remember, Church of Scientology equals one thing, okay? I'm not saying necessarily, but...
You're gay.
Yeah. See, who do we know that was in the Scientologist? Tom Cruise.
Right. Isaac Hayes. Jenna Elfman.
Right. Lisa Marie Presley.
Kirstie, what's her name?
Kirstie Alley.
Yeah.
John Travolta.
Yeah, he's
what do these people all have in common?
You're gay.
Oh. But they married them off, and they're all making babies and stuff like that, just like Rob Lowe did and Tony Perkins did before he died of AIDS. And then we found out that Tony Perkins was doing Tab Hunter. See, yeah. I got to tell you, this really just, this is what is, America is just, it's so pathetic, it's so tragic. I read earlier in the beginning of the show today that editorial from the National Post, an ultra-conservative newspaper, a rag here in Toronto, about legalizing marijuana, and we, not only should we go for it, but all the money that the government can make, legalize it, tax it, how it's much, much less harmful than cigarettes or booze. And it's long overdue that the politicians have the balls to just, you know, get right on it. In America, we're taking gigantic, huge, not baby steps, but big, huge goose steps back into the deep past. Everything is taboo. Taboo hunter, taboo this, taboo the Indian boy.
Drunk.
Right. God, it's just really sad. So we got to marry all these people off, and they have to have all these... Who the hell knows who the father is? In fact, they're knocking Michael Jackson. It's about the only thing I'll defend him on. He sure ain't the only one in Hollywood that's got, you know, a bunch of kids that he didn't make.
Yeah.
That's for damn sure.
But his marriage sure was convincing.
Yeah, just like David Cassidy's. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon wireless line. Come out already, wherever you are, you silly closet queens, okay? It's okay, it's okay, it's,
okay.
Yeah,
right, it really is.
They don't believe us. WQAM, hello?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Seca.
Seca, there you go, pristine, nothing wrong with Seca. Back in the day.
She might already be on there.
She what?
I think Boca Brian told Eric to put it on there.
Brian? Boca Brian. Well, nice job, Boca Brian. I don't
like
see it,
it's not on there, though.
So what does that mean? What are you trying to tell us?
That we should put Seca on there.
Let's get Seca on it. It's with two Ks, okay? What about Nina Hartley? There you go. What about Nina Hartley? Is she on there yet? She will be. Let's go now, Josh. Let's not start spending that money before the check gets there. Let's hop right on it. Nina Hartley, you got it?
I got it.
Yeah, I bet you do. 5670560, pound 560. That story about Sam's Place, man, because I got one right by my house there.
Sam's
right
Club.
Across,
owned
almost
by
across
Walmart.
The street.
Equally poisonous.
Don't bother.
Won't, I would never darken their door, man. You got to buy four bottles of soda and four packs of cereal. What the hell kind of crap is that?
Nazi crap.
You know, I'll tell you, whatever happened to that extra was the same thing where you had to bag your own. And although I will tell you this also, in Europe, almost all the supermarkets, at least in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I went to a supermarket in Rome when I was there, and I'm trying to think whether they bagged it or I had to bag it. No, I think they did bag it.
Extra was a self-service kind of a place. That's how they kept the prices low, but they didn't have, like, minimum you could you
no,
had
no,
to
no,
buy.
No, I understand that, but they also sold, it was like the same concept of selling industrial-sized boxes
sure.
of cereal, like Al Goldstein would eat.
To save money, nothing wrong with that, as long as you have the option.
But then you had to bag your own groceries, and that just seemed un-American. I mean, you know, I don't see what's wrong with that. I got really in the habit at Albert Heijn, or is that Albert Heine in Amsterdam.
You ought to be able
to bag your own. In fact, you had to pay for the bag.
Yeah.
So every time you go to the supermarket, there you'd be walking along with your little sack.
You could bring your own bag.
I kind of felt like Mo. I'd bring my own bag. And you'd be walking with your little sack to the store, and then, of course, you'd make sure that it was all rumpled up so they knew that you weren't stealing one of the brand-new pristine ones, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to bag your own groceries. Well, what's the big deal with that? That ain't no problem.
Especially when you had that little wire cart that all you old people pull around behind you. You just use that.
Never got me one of those, but I was thinking about it.
I'll send you one.
Okay. Next time I go back to Amsterdam. I heard that Paul and Old Romney will be broadcasting soon from Amsterdam. I didn't hear that, but, I mean, just, come on, get a life, will you please, Paul?
I have no life.
Jesus. Now they're taking polls online. Man, oh, man. How many votes do you think they had on that weather man thing?
About 30, man.
Replace Jackie Johnson. I voted for you, Bob. Bob Weaver got my vote. We love Bob Weaver. Channel 6, they're bastards, man. We hope that Joe Rose does great over there, but other than that, we can't stand Channel 6. We love Bob Mayer, too, and what's her name, Fat Kelly Craig. But Channel 6, their management sucks. What they did to Bob Weaver, there are people on death row for lesser, whatever it is, grotesqueries than what they did to my good friend Bob Weaver. So he's a little paunchy and old in the tooth, you know, old and long in the tooth, whatever he is. Just turned 95, but he's a good guy. Look at all the money he raised for charity in this town, right?
Right.
And they reward him by just making him disappear. The good thing, though, is the rumor, at least if that thing in the paper is right, he's still on the payroll. He's getting paid for not working, which we like a lot on this show, getting paid for not working. In fact, the summertime's coming, George. 12:13 at 560 WQM. Hey, if you're trying to lose weight by following a low-carb diet, the Lights of West Boca has helped thousands of people like you, low-carb dieters, achieve their weight loss goals because today's shopping for the low-carb products that are right for you has become more and more confusing. Now, most of the so-called low-carb products on the grocery store shelves will not help you lose weight. Selecting foods with the right ingredients as well as the lowest possible carbs, that's the key. That'd be the key. Your Life focuses on over 1,000 of the right low-carb food items and products that you can sample before you buy, and they have a knowledgeable staff to guide your success, too. So if you're on the Atkins, Sugar Busters, that South Beach diet, or any low-carb, sugar-free diet, don't prompt me to talk about that South Beach diet and the thing from Nabisco and Kraft Foods. Head for Delights of West Boca, the number one low-carb store in America, and let them help you reach your important weight loss goals. Lose that fat before they put you in a box. They're open every day, 7 days a week from 10 till 10, and you'll find Delights of West Boca on the northeast corner of Glades and 441 next to Boston Market. You can call them toll-free at 1-877-LOW-CARB, L-O-W-C-A-R-B. You're on the web, it's lowcarb.com. Don't forget Delights of West Boca, the one, the only. It's your official Atkins Retail Center.
Live and local. We're Sports Radio 560 QAM.
Howard David's a bitch.
All the things I said, now they can't be said. Janitor and f***ing the FCC went and threw a fit. All the things I said, now they can't be said. Can't they give me f***ing and John is dead. FCC is dead. We have had enough. We have had enough. We're in serious s***. Freedom totally lost. If I say call, call, I am totally f***. So radio has run out of luck. Cause the FCC is run by a f***ing I keep asking myself, wondering how I'll get girls to show their f***. Them guys can't stay a whack. They handpick this guy, should just throw in the towel. The FCC is run by Michael Powell. This is the f***ing of Colin Powell. All the things I said, now they can't be said. Janitor and f***ing, then the FCC went and threw a fit. All the things I said, now they can't be said. Can't they give me f***ing and f***ing all the dead. FCC is dead. We have had enough. We have had enough.
Ow, ow, ow. So I'm 19 at 560 WQM. Speaking of that, Clear Channel Communications yesterday, this is the finale, the final chapter of this, confirmed that it had reached that agreement with the FCC that satisfies all outstanding fines and complaints relating to broadcast of allegedly indecent material on its radio stations. In other words, they slipped them a couple of $1 million, and they said, okay, we'll look the other way now. Under the agreement, Clear Channel will make a voluntary contribution of $1.75 million to the U.S. Treasury, and the FCC will vacate existing fines and terminate current investigations and complaints against Clear Channel. How do you like that? I mean, I know I read this story yesterday that it was going to happen, but just stop and think of that.
Yeah.
In addition to the one-time payment, Clear Channel agreed to enforce its responsible broadcasting initiative for at least 3 years and establish a strong disciplinary plan for any employee who violates commission rules in the future. It was a tough negotiation, but a fair resolution, said Andrew Levin, executive vice president and chief legal officer and total sellout. We didn't agree that all the complaints were legally indecent, but some clearly crossed the line, and for those we've taken full responsibility, he'd be saying. No broadcaster has taken stronger steps to ensure its broadcast comply with the law, and we intend to keep it that way. In February, Clear Channel announced a responsible broadcasting initiative that include, and these are the people, by the way, who just about put the final nails in the coffin of this business, and they're talking about responsible, that includes policies and procedures to ensure that broadcasts do not violate indecency laws. Intensive training for all radio and programming personnel and on-air talent is well underway. Just like ours, intensive training. The settlement allows Clear Channel to close the chapter on indecency and move forward with our business, said John Hogan, president and CEO of Clear Channel Radio. And by the way, my friend Derek still says John Hogan can't drive his finger up his ass. This has been a complicated and controversial issue, but it's also proven that we can provide compelling, entertaining, and informative programming without being indecent, he said. Well, goody gumdrop for you. Levin also reiterated the company's call for the government to establish standards that would apply fairly and evenly all across media platforms. Cable and satellite networks should be treated no differently from broadcasters. In today's media landscape, that's a distinction without a difference. We all need to be accountable for what is said in the presence of our kids, Levin said. Well, screw you and your kids. How do you like that, huh? Ha-ha! Your mama. Take that. And by the way, you. Clear Channel, the antichrist of this industry. And then that schmuck there, that Glenn Garvin, that supposedly writes something about radio and TV for the Herald, he writes that stupid column a couple of weeks ago. Oh, well, they certainly haven't got a monopoly. They only own 1,250 of the 10,000 stations. Ken, overlooking how many of those 10,000 stations are like in little tiny podunk markets. And when you go to the major markets where they own the maximum of 8 stations or whatever they got, how many they got in this market? Is it 8?
Or 10? I don't know.
I think they got
about 30, man.
Is what they got. Oh, here you go. Tom Byron. Tom Byron's a good choice. Once upon a time, he looked pretty good. That was how many years ago?
About 30, man.
Just keep pumping that.
About 30, man.
Yeah, Tom Byron. Then all of a sudden, he became like, he wanted to get that Ron Jeremy look, that kind of combination slimmer, like kind of a John Holmes crossed with Ron Jeremy look, although he's still alive. 5670560, #560 on the AT&T and Verizon line. Don't forget author T.D. Allman. What's his name? Greg Allman?
Right.
T.D. Allman, whose latest book, Rogue State, America at War with the World. It's an excellent book. It's a paperback. You can even afford it. He'll be in the Gables tonight, 6 p.m. at Books and Books, 265 Aragon Avenue. He'll discuss his work, hold a question-and-answer session, as well as sign copies of the book and yank on Woody Graber's ponytail. Allman is also author of Miami City, The Future, the highly respected book, which was a bestseller in Florida for more than 3 years. I think I'm going to read the Michael Mayo column.
Okay.
Just for the hell of it. Well,
right.
Just because it's another Bush, another Reagan-bashing column.
Well, then.
Then by all means, go for it. I haven't printed it out yet, but I will. We'll get to it. WQAM, hello.
Yeah, hi there. I'd like to put in my vote.
Go right ahead.
Gage.
G-A-G-E-S.
Okay. All right.
Okay, thanks. Gage, you got it?
We got it.
You know who that is?
Nope.
Oh, neither do I, and do we care now? WQAM, hello.
I got another one for your poll.
Yes, sir, please.
How about Carrie Weigel? She's one of the biggest porn stars going, and she's a local girl, too.
All right.
She's the only one except that you have to remember.
She ain't no Kathy Willis, thank God.
And I thought I mentioned Terry Weigel.
Okay, thanks, Pally. Terry Weigel, you got it? I don't know how you spell it, but I'm sure that you'll figure it out. Maybe do a Google on it. Google it.
We got it.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
Put your Google goggles on and Google it. 567. And as a matter of fact, the thing you were trying to email me yesterday and took me to that AskJeeves.com, do you know that in my lifetime I've never, ever used AskJeeves.com once?
Me either.
Anybody out there ever use AskJeeves.com?
No.
But I hear it's a great stock.
Right.
5670560, #560 on the AT&T and Verizon Wireless line. WQAM, hello.
Yes, I want to add to your poll.
Please.
Yeah, Tabitha Stevens.
Tabitha Stevens. All right. Thank you so much. Who's that?
Samantha's daughter.
Is it really? No.
No, well, that's...
Oh, Samantha Stevens was Bewitched. I'm
right.
A little slow today, man. I'm thinking about holiday and vacation and going and plunging my guts in the casinos.
I'm not
paying any
either.
Attention to what crap you're talking. What?
I'm going to fall over. I'm feeling light in the head.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know
Well,
why.
That would be good. In fact, maybe you could be like Beaner Boy Jr.
Right. I'll start convulsing, too.
All right. If he starts foaming at the mouth, Josh, just to shove him on the floor. And
I got the chalupa ready to throw at him.
Move in on his spot. In fact, maybe spit on him a couple of times. Bring the Beast and Mo back in. Maybe they can wake him up a little bit.
That'll animate me.
Yeah. WQAM, hello.
Hey, I haven't been on the website lately, but has anybody called and suggested Marilyn Chambers?
Yes, they have.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, I don't think anybody did call, but somebody mentioned Marilyn Chambers and Linda Lovelace earlier. Now, did we actually not put her on there?
I don't know. I'm not looking at this thing.
Oh, yeah, she's got 12 votes. Boy, scared the living snot out of me. Marilyn Chambers has got a dozen. I guess I better read the result right now, huh? So people know the lay of the land, so to speak. Oh, you can't say that no more. So people know the land. Don't you remember that song by the Guess Who shared the lay of the land?
No.
Who's your favorite porno actor or actress of all time? I don't know any of their names, 92. I think your allergies are starting to kick in.
Is that what it is?
That's why you're sick today. Because I think you realize that starting tomorrow, you got what?
Oh, yeah, show allergies.
Now, what's your poll question for tomorrow?
I have no idea. I'm not going to have a question. I'm just going to let them put what they want in there.
Just call in and say stuff, and then put them on the poll.
It really doesn't matter what kind of question we ask. They answer what they want anyway.
Yeah, give us a bunch of words would be good.
Right. I'm going to start the poll with chocolate.
Okay. Well, I like that. How about dark chocolate?
Oh, not
too dark. I can't stand, and I've told you this before, is that like real... I like semi-sweet chocolate, but the real, real super dark, the cocoa, now that they... Oh, it doesn't have as much carbohydrates, which is... Oh, man, too bitter. I don't know any of their names, those porno people, but I sure like seeing them with their clothes off. 92. Jenna Jameson, 75. That's a fine choice. 76. Tracy Lords, 56. I'm afraid Tracy's probably going to hop over, and, of course, you'll want to see that. I don't watch porno. 42. 10.1%, but that percentage keeps dropping and dropping and dropping, just like their trousers. Christy Canyon, 31. Ginger Lynn, 17. Vanessa Del Rio, she's got a dozen. Coochie Coochie. Marilyn Chambers, 12. Nikki, you know who Marilyn, Vanessa Del Rio reminded me of? I've told you this before. She was in Fame.
Yeah. Oh, Rita Moreno.
Rita Moreno. Didn't she remind you a little bit of her?
Well, they're both brown.
Chasey Lane's got 8. No comments, please. Nikita Denise, 8. Rocco Cifaretti, 8. Italian. Peter North, 7. Nina Hartley, 6. Linda Lovelace, 6. Barbara Dare, 4. Raylene, 4. Jonathan Pollock, the nastiest, skankiest queen I've seen in a long time. Jonathan Pollock, 3. Ron Jeremy, 3. Seika's got 3. She was okay. Asia Carrera, 2. Paul Barresi's got 1. Oh, did he do a John Travolta? Gage, 1. Tabitha Stevens. Tabitha Stevens has got 1.
I'll bet.
Man, oh, man. Tom Byron and Tom Weigler. Who is it? Terry Weigel, they're still, they're working on it.
My and local. This is the Sports Radio 560
UAM. Oh, God.
Just got out of bar and took a hit, then would he act like Cheech and Chong? And get the munchies and make brownies filled with hash. And would he share it with Jesus and the saints, those pious potheads? And yeah, yeah, pot is great. And yeah, yeah, pot is good. And yeah, 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 yeah. What if God smokes cannabis? Smoking pot like one of us. Getting high on the back of the bus. Just him and Moses getting stoned. On a Greyhound bus to roam. To get some Vatican homegrown. A couple time back to take home. Smoked a big Bob Marley on his throne. No fun in heaven unless you're stoned.
Yaman.
1232 at 560 WQM. Here's the Michael Mayo column, and I'm so glad that I decided to read it. Well, I mean, twice a year, Mike writes something that makes a little bit of sense. Plus, he's just a devoted listener of this show. I mean, obsessed. Wouldn't you agree?
No doubt.
So, you know, he's probably listening right now and wondering, how come he didn't read my column? He read all those other 50,000 columns, Basher Reagan, a deserved ass. Okay, here you go. And by the way, CNN is still all over that thing like stink on Greg. I mean, it's unbelievable. And MSNBC is all over like stink on Mo.
Absolutely.
Reagan's reign wasn't all sunshine and accolades, writes Michael Mayo in his morning's prestigious Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel. Enough already, enough of the beatification and the warm, fuzzy revisionism, enough of the bogus notion that he was loved by all and that his policies harmed few, enough of the overwrought sentimentality. It's time for a Ronald Reagan corrective, writes Mike Mayovitz. It's been 5 days since the 40th U.S. president died. As his coast-to-coast farewell tour drags on, it seems the only voices coming from my television are the ones whose memories of the 1980s come wrapped in gauze. The voices in the real world aren't as unanimous or magnanimous. The way I look at it, the guy never did much for the majority of poor people, said George Gibson, 33 of Fort Lauderdale. My mom struggled during the 80s. It was hard to find a job when he was in that chair. On Wednesday, he and his mom made their weekly pickup from the Paparello Center in Wilton Manors, a food bank for those with AIDS, HIV. Here's how Gibson remembered the Reagan years. Dropping out of school in the eighth grade, joining a gang and selling drugs to support his family. Now he's found religion, works nights hauling trash, but can't make ends meet on his weekly $225 paycheck. Inside the Paparello Center, Father Bill Collins and Ken Fontaine were assessing Reagan's legacy. I see all these people lined up for hours to see his casket, and I'm amazed, said Fontaine, the center's vice president. He certainly didn't reach out to gays. He couldn't even say the word AIDS, said Collins, the center's founder. Not until it was shamefully late. According to Randy Schultz's book, And the Band Played On, Reagan's first speech about AIDS came in May of 1987. By then, 36,058 Americans had been diagnosed with the disease, and 20,849 had died. Wrote Schultz, already some said that Ronald Reagan would be remembered in history books for one thing beyond all else, He was the man who would let AIDS rage through America. Spare the talk of him being the greatest president of the last century. Spare the movement to put his face on the $10 bill. The $1,000 bill might be a more fitting tribute given his trickle-down leanings. The Reagan I remember was the president who ushered in the notion that the best way to help the poor was by giving to the rich. The Reagan I remember was the one who ran up the biggest deficits in the history of government until now, while winning re-election by promising to make deficit spending unconstitutional. The Reagan I remember couldn't remember how Oliver North and his rogue band of operatives subverted the U.S. Constitution from the White House basement. The Reagan I remember was the nutritionist whose agriculture department tried to classify ketchup as a vegetable, and the environmentalist who said that trees cause pollution. The Reagan I remember negotiated with terrorists, but now with air traffic controllers, he fired them instead. The Reagan I remember let the AIDS epidemic fester, content to ignore the far-reaching consequences, while moralists marginalized it as a gay disease whose sinful victims were getting God's retribution. When terrorists killed 3,000 Americans in 2001, the federal government responded by launching two wars that have cost $120 billion. When thousands started dying of this disease in the early 1980s, the Reagan administration responded by balking at budget requests over $10 million. Fontaine, who was gay, lived in New York in the 1980s. He remembers friends dying and the healthy ones tying up traffic in Times Square with protests to make people notice. He said the Reagan administration's attitude was much like his bosses at the accounting firm from Deloitte and Touche when employees started getting sick. We don't have any of those people working here, they said. Collins, who has tended to HIV/AIDS patients for the last two decades, said he hasn't watched much of the coverage this week. I've got a weak stomach, he said. He's seen a lot in his life, but nothing like this presidential extreme makeover. No warts, no detractors, all accolades. It's not the Reagan that many of us remember. Right, it's Michael Mayovich. Pretty good column there, Mike. Not bad. Pretty
good, Mike.
Good stuff. You go, boy. I mean, 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon. And they're still, there we go. They just had the unctuous Ed Meese in there, which I can't believe he's still alive.
Him chopping wood and riding on horseback.
And there you go. There he is on a horseback in his cowboy hat. And there he is with that grease down here with oh, man. Holy cow. Just, you're sitting here watching. You know, I think I made to myself, maybe nobody else picked cares about it, but yesterday I made that one point, and that is we're watching revisionist history of stuff that happened in most of our lifetimes right in front of our face here, minute after minute, hour after hour. They're pounding, they're brainwashing. All these people bringing their kids a tisca to tasket, let's go wander by the casket, you know. And the truth be damned, to hell with all the stuff that he really did, to hell with what he really represented, and all his evil right-wing buddies like Pat Buchanan, of course, in his speech at the 92 convention, which helped Clinton beat Bush. In my mind, that was one of the most decisive moments of that whole election campaign. Yeah, we're in a cultural war, all right, between decent, reasonable people who are tolerant and those people who are intolerant. Usually the religious right is what we're talking about. The finger pointers, the accusers, the people with their nose in everybody else's business. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon wireless line. But don't forget, the Jews killed Jesus.
Oh, I know. I saw it.
WQAM, hello.
Hey, Mr. Mills.
Yes, sir.
Could I please have your fact something? I have something very important I want to fact you.
305.
Okay.
650.
650.
0198.
0198.
You got it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, we got something important coming across on the fax machine. Amen, George. You watching it now?
I'm watching it now.
Anything happening yet?
No.
Well, give him a minute or two to dial that baby up. Something very important. Now, better be pretty good, because when somebody calls with a big build-up like that, you know, it would be like if I said I got a really important story here, like sit on the edge of your seats, and I read, like, you know, the front page from El Herald or something.
Well, he better identify, because how are we going to know which fact it is?
If it's very important, you'll know, okay?
It'll be
believe
spoken.
You me. If it isn't from a fat boy's neighbor, you'll know. WQAM, hello.
Down, down, and away.
That was your buddy Dave calling in from Cleveland. Josh?
Yeah,
he's practicing getting all whipped up for tonight's game. Let's see, this couldn't possibly be it because this is from John about the sugar industry. Once again, the Bush administration refuses to allow science to form public policy or get in the way of industry profits, and there must be another page coming with us, a page or two, right?
Yeah.
From Joey Lewis. Is he still alive? I'm pretty sure he's dead, Joey Lewis.
Who?
Hey, if you like Charlie Chaplin, you love eating away at science, is this article. The sugar industry, yada, 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 is fighting findings that link its product to obesity, and U.S. officials are echoing the company's line. Oh, my God. The Bush administration took an extraordinary step earlier this year to defend the interest of the U.S. sugar producers and the packaged food industry, both of which count top executives among the president's biggest fundraisers. In January, is there more to this, or is this it?
There's another page that I didn't fax.
Why not?
Well, I didn't know if you'd want the whole thing.
Of course.
Here it comes.
You're talking to a fat guy, man. You're talking to a guy who's hooked on sugar. It's I don't care what anybody says. And you skinny people out there, you don't know all about it because you're not addicted to it. It's the most powerful damn drug on the face of the globe.
Live and local. This is Sports Radio 560. UAM.
Bad for you, but tastes real good. And what gives you the excess energy to drive mom crazy?
Sugar!
So, what breakfast cereal will you tell mom to buy next time she goes shopping?
Sugar Shockers! Yeah!
New super sugar-coated Sugar Shockers are little bits of raw cane drenched in honey and coated with powdered sugar, glucose, fructose, corn syrup, and other natural sweeteners.
And taste just like sugar-coated sugar!
Right, because there's no yucky vitamins or minerals to spoil your fun.
Yeah!
And how does it make you feel?
Like I'm vibrating. Ooh.
Mommy, look like cartoon.
Mommy, look so good.
And moms will love Sugar Shockers, too, because inside every box, there's a free bottle of new Flintstones chewable Valium. So try new super sugar-coated Sugar Shockers from your friends at Irresponsible Foods.
1246 at 560 WQM. Before I get into that sugar thing, Chris Mooney and MotherJones.com. This must be the fax that Sean in Miami was sending us, right?
Or it could be one of these many also looking very important faxes.
That say what?
All kinds of things. I'll just fax them to you, let you sort them out.
Here's anyway, Sean in Miami says, I've cracked the code. Mega Dittos equals Oxycontin on the Ditto Head Show. Also for the poll, Heather Brooke and Queenie. Do we know who Queenie is? Sounds a little Queenie to me. Let's stick with Heather Brooke. What do you say?
Okay.
Got it? I think she's kin to Babbling Brook. Anyway, Chris Mooney writes in Mother Jones, eating away at science, and this really frosts my fat ass, and wait till you see one of the names of the companies in here that the Bush people are in bed with, the one that we were talking about before the show this morning that you hate like poison.
Dark Kraft.
Kraft. Anyway, the Bush administration took an extraordinary step earlier this year to defend the interest of U.S. sugar producers and the packaged food industry, both of which count top executives among the president's biggest fundraisers. In January, the Department of HHS sent a letter to the WHO with dozens of objections to the scientific findings that underlie the WHO's effort to issue anti-obesity guidelines. Only 8 months earlier, U.S. sugar manufacturers and other food industry groups had called for the personal intervention of HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson, the cheesehead, and urged him to challenge the WHO scientific findings about obesity, most notably a dietary recommendation to limit consumption of sugar. Sugar producers and the packaged food industry have a big economic stake and liability risk in the outcome of this debate. Obesity-related medical costs total $75 billion in 2003 in the U.S. alone, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and obesity is closing in on tobacco as the nation's leading cause of preventable death. Meanwhile, diet-related chronic conditions like heart disease and type 2 diabetes have overtaken infectious diseases as the leading cause of death worldwide. If obesity is deemed as merely the result of an individual's lifestyle choices, then companies involved in producing unhealthy foods are off the hook. But if such products are seen as causing obesity, then the sugar and packaged food industries could be in trouble. And they ought to be. The draft version of the WHO's anti-obesity strategy, for example, recommends taxing junk food and providing government subsidies for healthier products. The final WHO guidelines are scheduled to be approved this summer, and before drafting them, the WHO produced a summary of the scientific research, which finds a connection between obesity and unhealthy diets, including too much consumption of sugar and fatty foods. In April 2003, after this report was released, the Sugar Association and the Corn Refiners Association, which makes high fructose corn syrup, the leading soft drink sweetener, mobilized to have findings revised. Not only did they call on HHS to take action, but the Sugar Association also wrote to the WHO, threatening to have its allies in Congress eliminate the organization's U.S. funding if the WHO didn't rethink its anti-obesity work. The industry's leaders and representatives are certainly well-positioned to make their views known in Washington, especially to the president and his top advisors. The Bush campaign acknowledges, for example, that its Rangers, fundraisers who bundle at least $200,000 in donations, included the sugar magnate Jose Pepe Fanuel Jr., Richard F. Holt, a 2003 lobbyist for Altria, which owns Kraft Foods, and Robert Lieberman Jr., a lobbyist who last year represented Coca-Cola. And in the campaign's class of pioneers, bundlers of a minimum of $100,000, there's Robert A. Coker, a U.S. Sugar Corporation senior vice president, Barkley Ressler, Coca-Cola's vice president of government relations, and Joe Weller, the chairman and CEO of Nestle USA. Okay? The Sugar and Food Industry Associations contend that the WHO's global strategy fails to recognize that personal lifestyle choices are as much a cause of obesity as diet. And in January, when the Bush administration sent its comments to the WHO, it raised exactly those objections, echoing the industry's mantra of individuals taking personal responsibility. In a unlike the tobacco industry, I guess, right?
Right.
In a 28-page letter, the HHS Office of Global Health Affairs Director William R. Steiger, who happens to be George Herbert Walker Bush's godson, notes that the administration supports personal responsibility to choose a diet conducive to individual energy balance, weight control, and health. The letter goes on to criticize the WHO scientific reports linking a fruit and vegetable consumption to decreased risk of obesity, along with many of its other scientific findings. In response to these and other objections, the WHO decided to revise its guidelines. HHS spokesman Bill Pierce denies that industry groups helped in drafting the department's criticisms, but nonetheless, its January letter to the WHO discusses the value of industry input. HHS would encourage the WHO to add more language on the role of industry and or trade groups in addressing diet and nutrition, the critique says, especially those representing the food and beverage industries. What a communist bunch of crap this is, boys and girls. The most addictive damn substance on the face of the earth, sugar. And they're all just funneling that money right into their damn stinking
rectum
ass. Mm-hmm. How do you like that?
It's good for you.
Yeah, right.
Nutritious.
Sugar kills, make no mistake about it. Refined carbs kill. They're killers. I'd like to stick a chalupa right in their...
rectum.
Right. Ass. That's what I'd like to do. Hit him over the head with a chalupa, then let Moen B spit on him. So you're right about all your friends at Kraft Foods, man. They really suck. Kraft Foods, they're the antichrist, I think.
For years I hated them.
But I do like Kraft macaroni and cheese. I don't eat it because I got diabetes and I can't eat that crap. And
bored.
You know, if I'm going to eat some crap, I certainly would not be eating Kraft macaroni and
cheese.
There's
like eight different brands, just to name eight.
Really?
Yeah.
Such as?
Borden.
Don't say it because I don't want to be eating that. But I do like it.
Borden.
Kind of make right out of a box, you know, that powdery, that real nasty powdery crap. Boy, that's got to really be
terrible. You can make better macaroni and cheese your own self.
As a matter of fact, it's like orange cheese. Have you ever noticed that? It's like orange. Cheddar cheese is orange, but not like
not
that
cheese.
Kind of like synthetic orange.
Kraft doesn't actually make things out of food.
No. They call it processed cheese product, which means there ain't no real cheese in there. It's just a bunch of crap.
Cheese-inspired goop.
As a matter of fact, have you ever noticed that a lot of it has like the texture of plastic?
Because it is.
And maybe that's why so many people are acting spastic is because they're eating too much plastic. And maybe that's why those big fat puppets are no longer quite as elastic.
That sounded fantastic.
5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon line. Mr. Mandich, the Mad Dog at 2, the Humper at 4. We got Marlins and Indians tonight, pregame at 6:30, game time 7:05. Eddie Decay plunging his guts out after the ball game tonight. Well, he's always plunging his guts out. 106 people out there say their favorite porno actor or actress of all time. They don't know because they don't know any of the names, but they are having a good time. Jenna Jameson, 86. Tracy Lord, 64. I don't watch porno, 48. Now, you notice how that number keeps dropping and dropping and dropping? Now it's down to 9.4%. We're up over 13 once upon a time here in America. Christy Canyon, 35. Ginger Lynn, 24. Marilyn Chambers, 15. Vanessa Del Rio, who George don't like, 15. Nikki Dial, 12. Nina Hartley, 11. Chasey Lane, 10. Peter North, 9. Rocco Cifaretti, 9. Nikita Denise, 9. Bambi Woods, 8. Linda Lovelace. Linda Lovelace, 8. Seika, 7. Ron Jeremy, 6. Barbara Dare, 5. Raylene, 5. Asia Carrera, 5. John Pollock, she's got 3. That's Screamer. Only one thing I can say about that child.
Blaming.
Tabitha Stevens, 3. How about Samantha? How many she got?
Well, not anymore.
Where are we going? Gage 2, Paul Barras, Barassi 1. I think we spelled that wrong, I'm sure.
We don't care.
Terry Weigel 1. Tom Byron and Heather Brooke don't have any yet out of 520 votes. Boy, you're sure faxing me a lot of crap here, man.
This
machine is just cranking it. Now, is this that important stuff?
I don't know. You'll have to tell me which one is the important
one. From Bobby. It's about, let's see, it's a memorandum office of the county manager in Dade County. It says, I work at the courthouse, almost threw up all over myself when I read this, Schmidt. It says, Oh, no, wait a minute. Here's maybe this is the one that's very important from a dean in
although
Durham
that one that you're
PY.
Reading is, you know, it's something. You'll have to sort through them during the break, I'm sure.
Why is that?
Because there's a lot of them.
All these just a whole bunch of crap here. Well, anyway, this says, on June 6th, President George W. Bush issued a proclamation directing that the flag of the U.S. be displayed half-staff at all federal buildings for a period of 30 days.
The last paragraph of that particular memo is important.
Lastly, at their meeting on June 8, 2004, the Board of Commissioners passed a resolution permitting employees to donate 1 hour of appropriate accrued leave time in honor of President Reagan. The proceeds collected from the accrued leave donation will be donated to support the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. The Employee Relations Department will be sending out information on the procedure for donating the leave time. I'll tell you what I got for it. Okay, my foot up their ass. How do you like that? That's what I got for you, Mayor Penis Pequena, you idiot. Donating to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library? These are the same people that are still waiting for all that cash to trickle down their leg? Yeah. I wouldn't donate squat is what I would. I'd get out a penny. I get out an old Abe Lincoln penny is what I get out. Now, this one says very important. Right?
Right.
Oh, look at this. Here's proof of the Jeb Bush effort to remove voters from the roster. Enclosed, you'll find signed letters from Tallahassee restating my civil rights on 33103, my new voter's card with my new polling place, and the date which I was returned to the voting rolls, which is April 7th of 03. Now on 6404, I was removed. I even voted in the Democratic primaries. I'm classmates with Josh Darrow's class of 92, Miami. Well, nobody's perfect. But at any rate, look at this. The court system has notified Elections Department of your recent felony conviction pursuant to Florida statute, yada, yada. We've removed your name from the voter registration records, and this is dated June 4, 2004, even though he was reinstated back on April 7th of 03, returned to the voting rolls. You may register to vote if your felony conviction is overturned on appeal or when your civil rights are restored. When we receive this documentation, we'll reinstate you as a registered voter. Your restoration of civil rights form can be obtained from, and it's got an address and a phone number. Sorry, there's no local or toll-free number, of course. How do you like this? So once again, they're pulling the same bait and switch. This guy includes the letter,
right,
dated April 3rd, that reinstates him, authorized me to wish you an inclusion of right. Granting you restoration of civil rights in the state of Florida, except the specific authority to own possess a firearm.
Well, just
here's the Office of Executive Clemency, restoration of civil rights, including the right to vote, and all of these things. And yet, the Jeb Bush crowd, because this fellow happens to be dark-complected, as we could hear by his voice, as he called before, happens to be a little on the dark side, and probably is going to be voting for John Kerry, which is kind of scary. He can't vote. Comunista, comunista, baby. Florida sucks.
Live and local. This is 560. The radio's all yours now. QAM.
The 1 to 2 hour.
Well, he's a Tallahassee magpie. Ooh. Who got the money from his daddy. Ooh. And if I said my little bratty. Ooh. With an agenda that's crappy. Ooh, well, he's a Tallahassee Nazi, noble day of ballet. Well, he's a presidential son who doesn't have to run. No one else is gonna win. He might as well just move right in.
Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil.
He has a golden spoon. He was born with a pizzazz. So look out, all you Jews. Ooh. Get ready for the gap. He's a Tallahassee Nazi.
Oh,
to give our civil rights a whammy. Oh, I think the Tallahassee Nazi of the FLA. Well, he's a very wealthy dude with very fascist views who never paid his dues. By next year, we'll all be screwed.
Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil.
Any schmuck could win that race against Buddy McKay. Why do you think they call it Goober? Notorial anyway. He's a Tallahassee Nazi.
Oh,
he'll make the KKK happy.
Oh,
yeah, he's a Tallahassee Nazi.
I'm dying over here.
Come on, let's two-step. Come on, Adolf.
Well, the guy that's sent us that fax with all that material, he should be sending that to the Herald, the Sun Sentinel, the SPCA, the New York Times, every organization in the history of mankind. I mentioned the Herald and the Sun Sentinel because they're in South Florida, but they both suck. But I'm talking like maybe you knew a real newspaper like the Times.
Okay.
Is that incredible or what?
That's very credible. We knew it was going to happen.
So anybody out there who thinks that the ills of 2000 have been solved in the state of Florida and that we're not going to have another major scandal in what promises to be a very closely contested election, especially in Florida, you're dreaming, okay? They're going to do everything in their power to try to make it as close as they can so they can steal it again right in broad daylight and send down their crazy people to knock on the doors, let us in, so they can do the same crap again. I mean, how America just sat back and allowed that to happen in the first place beats the crap out of me. Just let his buddies on the Supreme Court. And by the way, there's another part of Reagan's legacy. Is William Rehnquist, Antonin Scalia, and Sandra, oh my God, O'Day O'Connor. There's another part of his great legacy right there. I mean, Scalia alone, forgetting about William Rehnquist. And you know what Rehnquist stood for in Gore Vidal's book, in Myron Breckinridge. Myron.
Oh, yeah, he just stood.
Yeah, stood up straight and saluted. Anyway, this fact about the economy is interesting about Reagan, this and about trickle-down, but the last sentence in it is kind of interesting. It says, by the way, I was involved in a business venture with Marilyn Chambers and almost became a porno star. I got literally screwed. How do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
He was in a business venture with Marilyn Chambers.
Sounds like an adventure.
Yeah. And then this article here that somebody faxed about the rabbi's wig ruling creates alarm among some who keep kosher. All I can say is, I'm in Dreard, okay? I just have, it's a long story and about the wigs, and if there's one strand of Indian hair in the wig that it's sacrilegious and idolatrous, oh, God. All you crazy religious people out there, give it up already. Give it up for sukkahs. Give it a rest.
The smell, what? The smell of all that burning hair.
Oh, yeah. Man, if there's anybody who knows about headgear,
absolutely,
that's the guy. In fact, he may not be in tomorrow morning, Mo. He may have to have his wig removed surgically.
Why is that?
Well, the beast, after he spit all that water, it maybe it was sugar water. Maybe there's some sticky substance in there that's going to make it stick to his head. No, who knows?
He tipped his hat to the beast.
Yeah.
We didn't even know he wore one.
He tipped his piece to the beast, I think is what he's saying. He's trying to make peace with the beast by tipping his piece to the beast. Well, you know what Josh Becker would say to that, don't you? Peace to you.
What kind of hat would Mo wear?
What is this picture? I can't make it out. It's filled with
it's
what?
It's filled with Ann Coulter.
Oh, no! How could you do this to me?
Well, just like that.
Oh, my God. You have to be schmitten me. Are you kidding?
Are you sure?
Oh,
there's only one way.
This should answer any question about Phil's turn to the dark side. He got hold of some bad pastrami. That must be it. Here he is standing side by each next to Ann Coulter with a big smile on their puss. And by the way, how many thousand pounds is he weighing?
About 30, man.
Yeah, about 15 tons. Even Tennessee Ernie Ford can't match this guy. Can you believe it? Big, fat, right-wing Phil Henry standing side by each with the unctuous, smelly, nasty bitch, Ann Coulter. Shame on you, Phil. Shame on you. We're done with your sorry ass.
Okay.
God. WQAM, hello.
Hey, Neil.
Yes, sir.
I need you to settle a debate. When President Bush got into office, was there a surplus of money?
A humongous surplus, yes.
How much was in that surplus?
I beg your pardon?
How much was in the surplus?
I don't remember. It was a humongous surplus.
Billion.
There was a surplus.
Billions, yes.
And now we do have a deficit.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay. No kidding. We had billions and billions in the surplus, and this man has turned it almost overnight. And they would say, well, you know, we had 9/11, but of course 9/11 had little to do with the billions and billions, which will soon be over a trillion that they're going to spend on this Iraq attack, which is based all on lies. But then again, it's Operation Iraqi Freedom. I'm going to say it again. You people in the media, you're the people responsible for all, they're the people with the blood on their hands. I'm going to tell you right now. All you people on CNN, MSNBC, Fox Nazi News, you are the people responsible, and all the networks as well. Responsible. You all have blood on your hands for sitting by. And I keep wondering, well, how come we had the same exact thing happen during Vietnam? Well, I guess that old farts like me, we just don't count anymore because, let's see, Vietnam ended how many years ago?
About 30, man.
Yeah, pretty close to that. So unless you're like, let's say, 45, anybody under 45 really has little understanding because in our schools, what do we teach about history? You know what we teach?
No.
Squat, nothing.
We teach the American Revolution and how
right.
brave it was.
We don't teach crap about real American history. Just propaganda. And so that's why there's so many people out there who don't remember what really went on with those 58,000 kids coming back in body bags and the way that the Army kept lying and lying through their teeth to us about casualties and they kept painting this pretty picture of how great we were doing. And Kissinger told us he had a piece in his hand. Yeah, he had a piece all right. Man, as Josh Becker would say, well, 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T. I'm serious. This thing with the media. How about that article I read about that Christiane Amanpour piece of the tearing that photo op for CNN that tearing down a Saddam statue in Iraq?
Yeah.
In the middle of a square that was like nobody ever heard of that place before, and there was 80 zillion of those same statues. And just coincidentally, there they were with their cameras rolling for CNN. It was a photo op. The glory. And then when they panned back, you realize there was only like a small handful of people there, and most of them were shills anyway. But the public just keeps getting sucked in over and over again by the images that they keep being shown. Because, let's face it, images are powerful. That's why when those pictures came out, that's why they were crapping their pants when all those pictures came out from
Abu Ghraib.
Because they knew damn well that people were going to be foaming at the mouth when they saw that crap. And that's why they're doing their damnedest to make sure we don't see the new ones. WQAM, hello.
Hey, Neil, how are you?
Pretty good.
Good. Neil, did anybody call about the Larry King show last night?
No, they did not.
Oh, you know what? Sometimes things amaze me. Larry had on George W. Sr. and Barbara. And they were, and Larry asks, I can't believe no one told you this yet. Larry goes, what do you think about Reagan being on, you know, any coins or dollar bills or 20s? And he goes, well, you know, he pauses, George, you know, senior, and he goes, you know, I could see that happening. I'd be for that. And then Barbara says, you know, then Larry says, what do you think, Barbara? And she goes, well, I think what's going to happen is the newer generations, you know, people like Reagan and Martin Luther King, I think the younger people are going to want to start seeing them on dollar bills or, you know, as far as our new generation of what they're perceiving as great people.
Yeah.
And Bush looks over at Barbara and says, Barbara, only presidents are on currency. And Larry goes, well, George, no. Who was the first Secretary of the Treasury? He's on the 20, or like, I don't know myself.
Alexander Hamilton.
Exactly. And Larry goes, well, George, Hamilton's on the $20 bill. And he goes, he wasn't a president. And George looks over Barbara and goes, he wasn't a president? How did no one call you and tell you this?
Nobody told me. That's because nobody watches Larry King.
Oh, my God. It was so then George was so embarrassed. He looked at Larry and he goes, she's always right. I'm always wrong.
It runs in the family. Thanks for the bad news.
Sorry, man.
Wow.
I don't know who's on the money. She's on the $1 bill.
There you go. Martha Washington. It's where she got the wig from George. Well, she liked guys named George, you know. 5670560, pound 560 on the AT&T and Verizon wireless line. How do you like that? How embarrassing, how humiliating and degrading, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's almost as bad as when he was putting on Ross Perot.
I know how to do a talk show.
Roll up your sleeves and do-do-do. You're going to crank out those old studies and roll up your sleeves and do-do-do. And he kept putting them on there and promoting. And millions of people, like a bunch of doddering idiots, went out and voted for Ross Perot. Thank goodness, because it helped Clinton get in. WQAM, hello.
Good afternoon, Neil.
Good afternoon, caller.
I saw that same interview.
Yeah.
Probably the last 15 minutes. First of all, Larry King, beyond the obvious, is reprehensible. He's hosting George Bush Sr.'s birthday party Saturday night.
Of course.
And, it's like...
he's got longest tongue in the history of the human race.
Bush's butt.
Right.
It's just... I mean, he's the biggest kiss ass I've ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
No question.
Well, he's your best, closest, dearest friend. Neil, have a great day. You're doing a great job.
Thank you, sir, and have a great life. Thank you. How do you like that? Larry King, sucky, sucky, kissy, kissy, that's his whole deal. And that, of course, is why nobody under the age of 100 watches that show. Once in a while, you know, I will, although last night I never even channel surfed over there. But I'll occasionally channel surf on it. Wouldn't if he's got somebody interesting who might have something to say. I'll watch some of that and just pretend Larry ain't there. I'll just pretend he's snapping his suspenders and lying through his teeth. By the way, did Larry ever pay those people back in Miami that he ripped off all that money?
No.
Oh. I just wondered. Just asking. I mean, he's only making millions and millions and millions and millions. And there's a guy, it's just amazing. Like, he drew a line in the sand and said, okay, that was my life then, and now this is now, and all you other people, screw you. Okay, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but those people, it's still their same life, and they still, you know, that's still their money that they want.
Too bad.
Oh.
12 minutes after 1 at 560 WQM. Is your company suffering from regulations and increased labor costs? Let Oasis Outsourcing help you when it comes to the people side of your business. payroll administration, Fortune 500 company employee benefits, human resource services, and risk management are just a few of the services Oasis Outsourcing can cover to help your business be more profitable. Call Oasis Outsourcing today for a free evaluation. Call 1-866-AT-OASIS. That's 1-866-286-2747. With more than 60,000 employees worldwide, Oasis Outsourcing understands the many facets of human resource management. And outsourcing is being recognized by firms large and small as a powerful management choice, which lets you focus on your core business while you leave the operational details to Oasis Outsourcing. So let the folks at Oasis Outsourcing make your business a lot more profitable by making that one easy call for a free evaluation. Call 1-866-AT-OASIS. That's 1-866-286-2747 for Oasis Outsourcing.
We're Sports Radio 560 QAM.
I call here the number one rated Mo Howard and David in his house, at least according to my aspirations. Stay away from me. I don't even know how you have children. Miramar, hello.
Yes, I want your take on Jay Fiedler.
Oh, well, Jay Fiedler is a great quarterback and a good Jew.
I like Jay Fiedler.
Well, not to mention he's got extraordinarily smooth buttocks.
Oh, yeah!
You've got to be careful what you say here.
Thank you, Mo.
No, wait a minute. Don't go.
But I have nothing else to say.
How about this? How's the weather down there in Miramar?
I'm right down the street from you.
Yeah.
I have to go.
Oh, wait. By the way, something.
No, I have to go.
Look, I tell you what. I'll hold you over the break. How's that? Huh? I'll give you one of my old tank T-shirts. How's that?
Bye-bye.
No, wait! That was the only caller we had.
The veins on your nose is growing again.
You go look in the mirror, you'll see a roadmap of insolency. You got your hemis on, way too tight.
I don't close when something stinks. Almost every day I think, and my veins, they start to tickle. My adenoid, joy. Yeah, I look like a fall in the bag. That's because I'm a crappy old bird. And I don't get spilled with purple veins. It is something like that you want to see.
A Science Channel discovery.
I know that a bleeding purple vein.
$1.18 at $5.60 WQ. That's number one with three bullets, by the way. It is outstanding, man. It is outstanding.
Showed up.
Bill O'Brien for president.
Oh!
Michael Moore for president, Bill O'Brien for VP. What do you say?
All right.
Be like a court jester, you know?
Keep everybody laughing. And,
yeah. Courtney Love, speaking of shtick, this is the last time I'm going to mention her on the show. And guess who I haven't mentioned at all today, even though the rumors are that she's pregnant? Don't say it. Remember yesterday we had the rumor about how, well, there wasn't a rumor, but supposedly she married Mark Anthony over the weekend. And now the rumors are that she's pregnant. She's with child. I'm not mentioning her name on the show again.
No, I'm not. I don't want to touch that.
I've just had it. With all the Ben Affleck stuff, and the media got sucked in and sucked in and dragged down the path. Enough already, okay? We're done with you, okay? What's your name? And this is the last one for this bitch, too. Courtney Love was charged with attacking a female friend of her former manager's in April with a bottle and a metal flashlight. She's just a crazy bitch. The felony charge of assault with a deadly weapon stems from an April 25 incident at the L.A. home of former manager Jim Barber. An arrest warrant for the rocker was issued yesterday. District Attorney spokeswoman Sandy Gibbons said Love was not in custody. It was unclear whether she'd been served with the warrant. She's been charged in three additional cases, including two that occurred hours apart in October. She's just crazy. Authorities said cocaine and other opiates were found in Love's system after she was arrested for allegedly trying to break into the home of a former boyfriend in October. Maybe she could get together with Cecil Collins. He could show her some good break-in techniques. He was just trying to get a peek. Love pleaded guilty in L.A. Superior Court to a misdemeanor count of being under the influence of a controlled substance and agreed to enter a drug rehab program in that case. She also faces felony charges in Beverly Hills Superior Court, where she's accused of illegally possessing prescription painkillers. Maybe she knows Russians. Maybe she knows Wilma. She pleaded innocent in that case, scheduled to return to court June 17. In May, Love was arraigned in New York City on charges of assault and reckless endangerment for allegedly hitting a fan with a microphone stand at a club on March 18. She just got a tough life, that's all. She's got problems, all right? She has problems.
I have no life.
That might be it. The Bush administration circumvented the Geneva Convention with the abuse of Iraqi prisoners at Abu Ghraib prison. The international advocacy group Human Rights Watch said today, in its 38-page report, the road to
Abu Ghraib.
It says the Bush administration deliberately allowed illegal interrogation techniques, then covered up or ignored reports of torture and abuse. They said the Geneva Convention did not apply to al-Qaeda detainees. Donald Rumsfeld said they didn't have those rights, said Reed Brody, an attorney for Human Rights Watch. But even when they're not prisoners of war, they're entitled to some protection. The organization cited three ways in which Bush administration policies created conditions for abuse at
Abu Ghraib
prison. First, the report said the administration adopted the position that the war on terror allowed circumvention of international law, meaning laws prohibiting torture were no longer binding. Second, the U.S. military used coercive methods to cause pain and humiliation for detainees to prepare them for interrogation. And third, before the publication of photographs of the abuses, the Bush administration ignored reports of mistreatment of detainees both in Afghanistan and in Iraq. The administration is continuing to fend off criticism from Democrats and human rights activists who say the administration ignored international law protecting prisoners of war. Administration officials maintain international treaties banning torture do not apply to al-Qaeda and Taliban prisoners. Basically, the mindset was anything goes, says Brody. The gloves come off. They felt we're not going to fight this war with one hand tied behind our backs, so we're going to do whatever we have to do. Then they said about looking for every legal loophole they could. Then they undermined 50 years of international law. See, they want one thing about these people, treaties, law, things like that, constitution, don't confuse them with these little things, okay?
Common courtesy, decency.
Oh, now, is this the big thing that we were talking about?
I was telling you that there's this continuous chain email that I keep getting, so I know everybody's getting them, this bullcrap email about
right.
Don't believe the media, here's what's really going on in Iraq, supposedly written by a soldier.
Oh, I know, I've seen this crap already before.
Yeah.
This is just garbage. You'll call the wonderful things that are happening in Iraq in between the car bombing. Okay, I've seen that crap
anymore.
Before. Please don't do that again, okay? I have
no,
a lot of fax paper here, but I value each and every sheet, okay?
They fax
and every sheet
continuously, and we've never
don't do it.
Nuts.
Hey, Anthony, get lost, okay? If you want to be our fan, go away. Cut the faxing. Enough of the faxing. Anyway, getting back to that, what I was just suggesting there, from the Brit Independent, Rumsfeld told officers to take gloves off with Lind. I wonder if that was Paul Lind. John Walker Lind, the so-called American Taliban, was stripped naked and tied to a stretcher during interrogation after the Office of Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld ordered intelligence officers to take their gloves off when questioning him. Mr. Rumsfeld's legal counsel instructed the officers to push the limits when questioning Lind, captured in Afghanistan with Taliban and al-Qaeda forces in late 2001. The treatment of Lind appears to foreshadow the abuse of Iraqi prisoners at
Abu Ghraib.
The details of Lind's interrogation confirm claims made by his attorney, Tony West, that when he was captured by the Northern Alliance forces and handed to CIA operatives near the northern Afghan city of Mazar-e-Sharif, he asked for an attorney. Not only was he refused an attorney, not advised of his rights, but his interrogators were told to get tough to obtain actionable intelligence in the pursuit of Osama bin Laden. Documents seen by the LA Times show that when a U.S. Army intelligence officer started to question Lind, he was given instructions that the Secretary of Defense's counsel has authorized him to take the gloves off and ask whatever he wanted. The documents show that in the early stages, Lind's responses were cabled to Washington every hour. Though Lind initially pleaded not guilty, he later admitted to reduced charges and was sentenced to 20 years. He and his lawyers also agreed to drop claims that he had been tortured by U.S. personnel. A Defense Department spokesperson said the Pentagon refused to speculate on the exact intent of the statement from Mr. Rumsfeld's orifice. Department officials stressed that all interrogation policies and procedures demand humane treatment of personnel in their custody, said the spokesman. Right. And it goes on. About that memo, which we already know about, and nobody really cares. If you stuck it right in front of their face, all the evidence, don't confuse us, we got a ball game to watch, you know what I'm saying? And speaking of ball games, if we have any more stinking damn promos. We've had more play-by-play on this show today in these damn rejoins and promos than you do during the course of a normal ball game. Clarence, Mr. Sports, God almighty,
sports!
It's one thing that we carry to ball games. Do we have to replay the whole damn thing during the show every day?
Yeah,
oh, okay. Kill some good time again. So after we come back from the break, we'll play some of the highlights. There weren't many highlights, actually, from last night's Marlin game, from Souther Marlin game, from a long time ago, from the World Series. Some real exciting highlights with Dave Van Bore. Soros, here's some good news. Soros spending millions to defeat Bush.
All right.
George Soros' dream is President Bush losing in November, and so far the billionaire philanthropist has donated nearly $13 million to independent groups that also want to turn that vision into reality. I'm merely putting my mouth where my money where my mouth is, Soros said, after surviving the Nazi occupation of his native Hungary and giving away billions of his self-made fortune to charitable causes. Soros is entering national politics in a big way for the first time. He says he's too disturbed by Bush's policies to do nothing. This is not a normal election, he said. These are not normal times. The Bush administration, he said, has flouted past rules of international relations by declaring war in Iraq after 9/11, after the terrorist attacks. This is poorly written. He urged Americans to defeat the Bush doctrine by ousting the president November 2. If we reelect President Bush, we're endorsing that doctrine, and we have to accept the consequences, he said. To that end, he's given millions to three liberal-leaning organizations that also want a Bush defeat, $10 million to America Coming Together, $2.5 million to the MoveOn.org Voters Fund, and $300,000 to the Campaign for America's Future. He's also pledged $3 million to the Center for American Progress, a think tank led by John Podesta, chief of staff for President Clinton. Nice going, George Soros. You go, boy. In fact, I'm sure George Rodriguez will toss in his couple of million, and we'll be all set.
Sure, I got it right here.
And Josh, once Josh gets that check in the mail, another couple of million will really be on top of him. We'll be all, like, all over like a stink on Mo. One? Like spit on Mo. 127 at 560 WQM. Anybody tuned in late, they missed the excitement. The Beast and Moe get into a spitting match now, okay? Yesterday it was Moe's turn, spit a bunch of water all over the Beast, and then the Beast got even with the day, and Moe was so excited by it, was so impressed by the Beast, that he actually went on a Joe Rowe show demanding the microphone so they could give his kudos. He could tip his hat and his piece to the Beast. Man, oh man. I have little regard for any creature alive that would give a piece to the Beast. Anyway, let me tell you about Brandy Shoes in Pompano Beach, 1290 North Federal Highway. A great place to take your feet for fantastic shoes. Best name brands, best selection, best prices, best sales holes are really to take good care of you. They know your feet inside and out. They got the top names in the shoe business waiting on you. They got Rockports, Florsheim, SAS, Sperry, Timberland Naturalizer, and lots more. And with the humongous selection of Brandy's, you can just about bet Greg Reed's life on it that whatever style you like, they got your size in stock right now, ready to slap on your big fat feet. Brandy's is open daily, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 9, and Sundays, 10 to 5. You'll find them, like I said, at 1290 North Federal Highway in Pompano Beach. It's always worth the trip, and don't forget, just in time for Father's Day, step up to Florsheim. All great styles this week, 20% off. Come into the store to check this out, or visit them on the web at brandyshoes.com.
Live and local, this is Sports Radio 560, QAM. Coming up tonight on Inside the Behind, the true Hollywood celebrity music biography profile story. They were from Canada, where everything is so much better. They were Lynn. I know that
our music was about, like, positive and upbeat things, eh?
Lynn's founder, Mark Costanzo.
Basically, eh, Canadians are, like, happier than you Americans, eh? We got, like, a healthcare system that, like, works, eh? And, like, the crime rate is much lower here, eh? And nobody in the Middle East is, like, mad at us, eh?
What are you trying to say?
Oh, nothing, eh? Just nobody calls us the Great Satan or anything, eh?
Look, that's enough, you Canadian.
Oh, it's okay. I know what the hostility is about, eh? But, like, we're this close to legalizing marijuana here, too.
You are? How soon you think?
Oh, any day, eh?
Listen, you think you could put me up for a few weeks? You know, I scope out a place to live.
Oh, sure, eh?
Great. Sorry I got bad before.
Whoa. An apology, eh? I've never heard an American do that, eh?
Lynn, their upbeat, positive music has shed new light on a place that just might decide not to put me in jail for getting high. It's a big, juicy, sopping wet look at show business tonight on Inside the Behind.
132 at 560, WQAM, A, Mad Dog at 2, Humper at 4, Marlins baseball at Cleveland tonight, pregame 6:30. Federal agents Wednesday, yesterday, charged six Continental Airlines employees in Newark and 10 people in Miami in Miami.
Oh, my God.
Including four airline workers with smuggling hundreds of pounds of cocaine into the country through Newark Liberty International Airport. The workers were baggage handlers at the airport who used their position to divert suitcases of cocaine from customs inspections, according to U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The workers also laundered millions of dollars in profits by taking suitcases filled with cash out of the country, again using their position to bypass inspection, authorities said. In other words, why should we just leave it all to the American Airlines workers when the Continental people can get on the act, right?
Right.
The employees traveled to Miami, Puerto Rico, La República Dominicana, elsewhere to import the drugs and export the cash. Continental workers at airports in Miami and Puerto Rico have also been implicated in related schemes. 10 people, including four Continental employees, were charged Tuesday in a cocaine conspiracy indictment issued in Miami. Oh, my God, cocaine in Miami, what a concept. That's your blows. Now, here's a piece of good news. Now, listen, I got to get, because I'm almost out of time here. I got a half an hour. I didn't realize a couple of things we want to get in here.
You ain't got no half an hour.
26 minutes.
All right.
But who's counting?
Me.
And then you take out those 7 minutes of spots, it's down to 19, and a couple of minutes of breaks in there, I mean, of rejoins, and then 45 minutes of play-by-play.
It's time to go.
And boring in the booster, it's time to, like, go home, bye. Oh, don't forget author T.D. Allman, whose latest book, Rogue State, America at War with the World, will be in Coral Gables tonight, 6 p.m. at Books and Books, 265 Aragon Avenue. He'll be talking about his work, hold a question-and-answer session, as well as signed copies of his fine book. It's paperback. You can afford it. Rogue State, America at War with the World. He's also the author of Miami City of the Future, a highly respected book, which was a bestseller in Florida for more than 3 years, but don't hold that against him. So he'll be there at 6 tonight, Books and Books, 265 Aragon Avenue in the prestigious right-wing Gables. Although his book is hardly right-wing. Now, this is a piece of interesting news, which I find very amusing and pleasing. The L.A. County Board of Supervisors yesterday affirmed its decision last week to negotiate an agreement with the ACLU of Southern California on which a tiny cross will be removed from the county seal.
All right.
Isn't that great? It's a little teeny tiny one, but it's a cross.
Aw.
Supervisor Mike Antonovich asked the board to seek outside counsel for a comprehensive legal opinion on the issue. The supervisors voted 3-2 on June 1st not to fight a court battle over the seal, said, and Antonovich's motion failed by the same 3-2 vote. County spokeswoman Judy Hammond's supervisor, John Nagy, supported and...
What are you doing?
I beg your pardon?
Are you doing that on purpose?
Doing what?
Breaking up like that.
No.
Okay.
Are you having a technical problem of some sort?
We were.
I'm doing nothing here.
Okay.
I'm sitting here talking.
Okay.
Supervisor Don Navy, will you shut up, supported Antonovich's motion, but Supervisor Jeb Yaroslavsky, Gloria Molino, and Yvonne Braithwaite-Burke opposed it. Hundreds of people spurred on by a radio talk show host gathered in and outside the Board of Supervisors meeting room to protest the plans for removing the cross. In the Soviet Union, there was a joke, said radio host Dennis Prager, who is Jewish, as he spoke before the board. A very powerful dissident joke, I'm sure that Zev remembers this. They used to say in the Soviet Union, the future is known, it's the past which is always changing. Totalitarianism is not possible unless you erase the past. That is what you did. That is why there are so many people here and thousands outside. In a May 19th letter to each supervisor, the ACLU of Southern California argued that the Latin cross on the 47-year-old seal is a sectarian religious symbol that represents the beliefs of one segment of the county's diverse population. The ACLU contends the inclusion of the cross on the seal represents a violation of the constitutional precept of separation of church and state. Protesters carried signs comparing the ACLU to the Taliban and lined Temple Street at Grand Avenue in front of the Kenneth Hahn Hall of Administration in downtown L.A. Others held signs reading, Jews for the Seal, Anti-Christian Liberties Union, ACLU, and Stop the Cultural Cleansing, Stop the ACLU. Many drivers, including one in an L.A. County Sheriff's Department car, honked their horns in support of the protesters. In closed session June 1st, the Board of Supervisors voted to negotiate with the ACLU, which had threatened to sue unless the cross is removed from the county seal. Just get it off of there, okay? Just get it off. Take the cross off, take the schmatas off, take the Star of David off, take all of that crap off of there. Nearly 100 people signed up to speak on the issue before the board. Some comments to board members became personal. A few Hispanic and black speakers accused Molina, who is Hispanic, and Burke, who is black, of not representing the views of their communities. Yaroslavsky, who is Jewish, was also told that removing a cross from the seal conceivably could translate to the ban of all religious-oriented symbols, such as Jewish boys being banned from wearing yarmulkes, to which I say, yeah,
right,
go for it. Another speaker said being forced to remove the cross reminded him of Nazi Germany. I'd like to remind him that the swastika was nothing more than a twisted cross. Okay?
Yeah.
That's all that was, you jackass. But at any rate, see, this is the thing that I'm never, ever going to understand. Why can't you just do your own thing and keep it out of the public? Stop trying to jam it down our throats.
Because it's for your own good. It's because
yeah.
we love you.
I got something for their own good, and that's my foot up their ass. How do you like that?
If a friend was drowning, wouldn't you want to help them?
If the little kid, is dragging the lady across the street to do his good deed, and she doesn't want to cross the street, maybe it's not such a good deed after all, okay?
Well, the late
especially
lady
after she
know.
Scrapes her knees and scrapes her bag on the street.
He's saving her.
Yeah. We don't want to be saved. We don't want to be helped. We don't want to be saved. We just want to be left the hell alone. That's all. All you religious crazy people out there, whether you're fancy schmancy headgear.
You'll thank them.
You
heaven.
Can wear the fanciest headgear you can find, baby. That ain't going to get you to heaven. You're still going to be in that box, and the worms are still going to get you. I hate to break the news to you.
So you're
and they're
wrong.
Not going to be parading you all around having people march by the thousands by your casket. I still say the box is empty.
Oh.
Wouldn't it be something yeah. if a Brad Pitt lookalike came running in there and went right up to it and said, "What's in the box?" Wouldn't that be great? That'd
be great
TV.
That'd
be even more
out.
Exciting than that phony bomb threat they had yesterday afternoon. You should have seen, because I know you didn't see it. You should have seen Wolf Blitzkrieg and Paula Zahn hyperventilating on CNN. I thought they were going to, stroke out right there on the camera. It was unbelievable. Well, we don't really have any more information than this. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, brother. False alarm. And, of course, that idiot with Anderson Cooper,
mm-hmm.
who sends me straight to the pooper, that moron, he's standing out there breathlessly on the lawn, and now the cops are, pushing him back to the street, Oh, well, we're being asked to move back, and then they practically shoved him down in the street, which I would have loved. I'd have high-fived the TV set if they would have done that. Just get out of here already, you idiot. Take your damn camera and your microphone and stuff it. Get out of our face. You moron, you, from the Certainly Not News Network. That was a false alarm. Not that we're a little edgy, you understand. 20 before 2 at 560 WQM. If your hair is coming out in clumps, here's the answer for you. Not some phony-looking piece.
Absolutely.
Not some nasty-looking muskrat. Not some weasel thing crawling around on your head. Not those dangerous pills which might just kill you and probably won't grow any hair back at all. But Charles Alfieri's natural hairline system, it's the most amazing hair system anywhere in the universe. Charlie's been all over the place for over 35 years now, helping guys look great. He's been on Good Morning America, the Today Show, CBS Morning News, with his exclusive patented hair system that's the best in the universe. And you have nothing to lose but that bald spot because Charlie gives you this guarantee. You try his system for 30 days.
About 30, man!
After a month, if you don't love the way it looks and feels and smells, if you're not getting clawed at and pawed at even by old ladies, return it for a full refund. Charlie also services and repairs existing hair systems while you wait, including shampoo and trim. So don't delay. Call Charlie today and change your life forever. Look better and younger than you dreamed you ever could again. Say goodbye to that big bald spot and get some great-looking hair. Call toll-free 1-800-321-2413. That's 1-800-321-2413. Or check them on the Wicked World Wide Web at charlesalfieri.com.
Live and local. We're Sports Radio 560 QAM.
How dare they drag the good name of the United States of America through the mud of Saddam Hussein's torture prison?
Abu Ghraib.
Don't like all the Harper.
Dum, dum, dum. Every time I see.
That retarded dimwit.
Dum, dum, dum. On my TV.
He's president of Republican muscled in an inarticulate idiot. I don't know why they would want this guy, but now he's here. We're screwed the next 4 years.
Boy,
the president of
even dumber than me.
He's president.
an infant. You don't care what it took. You got him in by hook or crook. The Christian right knows what's best for you and I, but have no fear. We've got a great leader with President Trump. President Trump.
See, I guess George Herbert Walker Bush don't know who's on the $20 bill because he generally don't carry anything that small around with him.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, what does he know about tens and twenties? Here's a fact that I love. It says, did anyone mention that Altria, the owners of Kraft Foods, used to be named Philip Morris? Macaroni and cheese with a cigarette, the lifestyle of champions.
Right. Oh! It's the healthy choice.
There you go. I love it. Although George hates Kraft Foods like poison. I mean, like just,
yes.
I can't even believe it. Even worse than Walmart, I
years
think.
Years ago.
Even worse than Walmart.
I don't know about that. Equally.
Neck and neck, nose to nose.
There's no chance I will use any of their products or be in any of their places.
Here's a fax that says, please add Shane from the Louise Shane's World of the Pool. She's hot, hot, hot. S-H-A-N-E, Shane.
Okay.
What a shame if we left off Shane, right? And it also says Kerry in 2004.
Oh!
All right. Is he still around, John Kerry? Is he? You know something? I think he's benefiting. Just sitting back. Maybe he's got the right strategy.
Maybe he's in that box.
He sure looks like it. Well, guess whose birthday it is this week, boys and girls? And I can't play the whole thing, but I certainly can play a little bit to give him a clue.
Oh, my God, I feel so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's talking about a pat on the back, a pat on the tail feathers. For his birthday, the cantankerous and often unlucky Disney legend fated his birthday at Disneyland Paris yesterday by dancing on stage under a shower of confetti as hundreds of park revelers sang happy birthday to you to Donald Duck. A street parade down the theme's main park's main part marked the occasion with Mickey and Minnie Mouse leading the way.
Well, there's just
not
a little
yet,
something
there. Daisy Duck and Friends. Daisy Duck and Friends trailed behind carrying a giant pink cake bearing 70 candles. See what great timing I've got? I'm just amazing. I amazed myself. Donald made his acting debut June 9th, 1934 in a silly symphony movie titled The Wise Little Hen. I didn't know that. Did you?
No.
The Wise Little Hen.
I didn't Disney characters.
Since then, the lovable yet fussy fowl has appeared in hundreds of films, from the educational Donald Duck in Mathematics Land to the 1942 cartoon Donald Duck Drafted. Turning entirely incoherent during his frequent feather-flying tantrums, Donald's favorite sayings in calmer times include, ah, phooey, and oh, yeah. Which I can't do that Donald Duck thing. Donald, who would long time love Daisy during much of his career, usually wears a sailor suit with inexplicably no pants. Oh, I know some guys like that.
That's not inexplicable.
Huh?
There's an easy, simple explanation.
Hey, sailor!
His middle name, revealed in the WW2 draft cartoon, is Fauntleroy. Did you know that?
No.
Well, you're learning so damn much, it's almost dangerous. His nephews, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, went on their own showbiz career, starring alongside Donald's uncle, Scrooge McDuck, in the Disney series DuckTales that debuted in the late 80s. Clarence Ducky Nash was Donald's original voice. He was succeeded by Disney artist Tony Anselmo. Moving from the screen to the printed page, Donald debuted in the Daily Comic Strip in 1938. Donald stars alongside Mickey Mouse in Mickey's PhilharMagic, a new 3D attraction at Disney World in Orlando. Disney also released a retrospective DVD last month titled Walt Disney Treasures, the Chronological Donald Volume 1. For the festivities in Paris yesterday, Karl Lagerfeld drew a portrait of the birthday duck sporting the fashion designer's signature glasses and cardigan. T-shirts with the image will be sold as collector's items. You better get yours
boy.
Now.
Boy.
There you go. Donald Duck, 70 years old. Boy, it sure makes us feel really like ancient. Ancient. Katrina Vandenhoevel in The Nation writes, responsive chords. Do I have time for this? Oh, I sure do. I think I'm going to try. I'll read fast. She says, the pioneering genius of political advertising, Tony Schwartz, used to preach that the most effective ads don't seek to convey information, but to reach into the target audience's mind to pluck the responsive chords already there. And Bill Schneider, the shrewd public opinion analyst, has said, what the American people want most in a president is what they didn't have in the last one. So perhaps the way of plucking the responsive chords of those 4 in 10 Republicans who now say they would reconsider their support for Bush in November is to ask them such responsive chord questions as the offhand sampling below. Would you rather have a president who can change his mind when his vision of reality turns out to be mistaken, or one who dares not change for fear of appearing weak, who believes that evidence necessary to justify a war has to be carefully weighed, or one who is satisfied when a CIA director tells him the evidence is a slam dunk, who fires advisors who have misled him, or one who fears to reveal that he knows that they've misled him, who asks a variety of wise men and women to advise him as well as God, or one who thinks that that is enough that he hears and recognizes God's voice, who goes back to the Constitution for guidance on liberty and values, or one who goes instead to religious fundamentalists. A president who, when considering health care policy, gives first priority to the health of children and parents, or one who gives first priority to the interest of the drug and insurance companies. Who either confides in and trusts his Secretary of State or else replaces him, or one who does not give his Secretary of State information that he discloses to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Who, when on 9/11 hears that Washington and New York are under deadly attack, takes charge immediately, or one who, not knowing what to do, goes on reading to a third-grade class that he's visiting. Who can remember his mistakes, hence moves to remedy them, or one who says he cannot remember any, hence cannot do any remedying. Who claims victory when it is won, or one who claims it before it is won. Who gives a high priority to humane programs like keeping veterans off welfare, or one whose priorities run instead toward ensuring that corporate contributors like Halliburton receive profitable contracts. A president who faces the media frequently and accepts the obligation to inform press and public, or one who fears the press and relies on one-liners to divert it. Who reads some of the newspapers that oppose or support him, or one who doesn't read any paper. Who seeks advice from a wide array of energy experts and experienced people, or one who draws heavily on the oil industry. Who tries to understand the variety of Americans and the variety of their problems and needs, or one who thinks his circle of friends is representative of America. A president who appoints a diverse committee to investigate how 9/11 could have happened, or one who stacks the committee with allies and cronies. Hopefully, some of these questions will spark some responsive chords. I also welcome reader suggestions for questions, and she's got a place where you can click the link to, and she says, I'll post a sampling in the coming weeks. Katrina Vandenhoeven of the Nation, she's outstanding, muy excelente. 152 at 560 WQM, Mad Dog coming up at 2 o'clock. You know what? All right. Okay, we're almost out of time. Well, this worked out just fantastical, didn't it?
Beautiful.
It sure did.
Ducky.
Anyway, here's, I beg your pardon?
Ducky.
Yeah, it was really Donald Ducky. Who's your favorite porno actor or actress of all time, we asked today? I don't know any of their names, 132. I'm enjoying watching right now, but I don't have time to check the names. Jenna Jameson, 102. Tracy Lords, 80. I don't watch porno, 53. Down to 8.2%. Liar. Christy Kanan, 42. Ginger Lynn, 31. Marilyn Chambers, 24. Vanessa Del Rio, 22. Nina Hartley, 17. Casey Lane, 15. Nikki Dahl, 15. Peter North, 13. Asia Carrera, 11. Ron Jeremy, 10. Bambi Woods, 10. Rocco Cifaretti, 10. Seika, 9. Linda Lovelace, 9. Nikita Denise, 9. Tabitha Stevens, 9. And everybody else, small potatoes.
Bye, bye, bye!
The Neil Rogers Show on 560 WQAM, Miami, Fort Lauderdale.
You know, they got the hot, yeah, look.